It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, I'm in a good mood. I'm in a very good mood. It's 76.8 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. We had a perfect day yesterday, a near-perfect day today, a little March windy, but, you know, Zephyrusik with his sweet brief hat and the Ivory Holton Heath, that, sure. I mean, naked radio. It's spring. Well, not quite, but daggum, you know, I'd like to dare hope that propane and kerosene season is over, but it's probably a little too early for that yet, but it's never too early. I mean, naked radio. What can I say? I mean, after the picture of Julius Geezer that came out this weekend of him signing maggot hats and I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Mm-hmm. Not good enough to do video, but pretty good about myself. So, yeah, I'm in a good mood. Hi, this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to, for instance, become part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. If you pick out a screen name and a password at the chat room tab at HeadOn.live, well, you'll be immediately met by Squeaky. It being Monday, people are slow to stumble in, I guess. But Squeaky's there, and you'll be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master on a day when it's 66 degrees and not a cloud in the sky in Northern California, let the mowing begin, Sparky says, has folded space to become Man Cave. You'll also be moderated by midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, who's on hand this evening, and others who wander along. Well, that's just disgusting, Steve. It's too early to, and I don't do that during the program, so just no. No. So, yeah, it's Moran Monday. I'm in a good mood despite all the crazy that's out there. I'll try to maintain it for the next almost 3 hours. We have thanks to send out to our subscribers, as we do at the beginning of every program. Thanks very kindly to all of the following partial sponsors of the program, who make up for about a quarter of the Horn funding needs for the month. We're not quite to the halfway mark, but we'll talk. You know, I think I've come up with a name for the subscriber group. You know, we toyed with the Fantastic 400. We're nowhere near that. The Happy 100, haven't gotten there either. I think we'll just default to FOB, F-O-B. In shipping parlance, that means freight on board. But for purposes of the community, FOB stands for Friends O'Bob. Yes. FOB. Thanks going out to the following fobs, to Libby, and to Tony and Chico, and to John. Thank you, John. Thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thanks to Christopher, You heard Christopher on Friday on the Front Porch last Friday. And to Sean, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Sean. And thanks as well to those who jumped in over the course of the weekend to help us knock down some of the deficit that was left from last week. And that would include our pal Joy in Ann Arbor, as well as Heidi. Thank you, Heidi. And Jean Ann. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks as well to other subscribers, Kat. Thank you to Kat, and thank you to Daniel and Judy and Don. Thanks to Khalil. Thank you to Kathleen. And that gets us caught up with our thank yous. Thank you very much indeed, all of you subscribers. And thanks thanks as well, going back to last Friday, to our pal Lady B. So where does that leave us with the new week upon us? Well, it leaves us here. $323. There's $123 to catch up with from last week, $200 for this evening, and then we go forward. So I don't know how to make that happen any other way than to say bills are due. And so if we could not have a $523 fundraising hole tomorrow, that would be freaking awesome. So hopefully, maybe we'll just wipe out this week. But that's where we stand, 323 to go for this evening. And a little reminder, 2 days away, maybe mark this on your calendar. We're 2 days away from the 13th. That'll come on Wednesday. Prayer meeting Wednesday. And you might recall that the 13th of the month here at the Horn is the loneliest subscriber day of the month. Our pals, Gary and Gaia, are the only subscribers for the 13th of the month. And they would love to have some company. So maybe think about doing a subscription this Wednesday for Prayer Meeting Wednesday so that stand in solidarity with Gary and Gaia. That would be very, very helpful indeed. Now, where to go? Okay, reminder. I should probably mention this every day between now and the end of the month. I will be gone from April 1st to April the 11th or 12th, depending on when I get home from D.C. I don't like being away from the microphone. But this is one of those all-hands-on-deck kind of moments. We're going to be working on the AIC Act in Washington, in the House of Representatives, probably making a couple of forays over into the Senate, but almost all of our efforts will be focused on the House of Representatives. We won't, for instance, be paying a call on my member of Congress because, she's entirely not, she's a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry. So, no. But I'll be gone, and I tell you what, I don't know if there's any way to pull this off. You tell me. I would like to be able to, and no guarantees, but I'd like to be able to try to get a couple of programs in. And, hit and miss, if not every blessed evening. But from things that I learned in New Orleans last summer, I think that a whole bunch of our road rig has seen better days. So that being the case, I'm giving some thought, and again, you tell me. There's a little mixer out there that would do everything we need to do on the road. I know from talking to our buddy Arnold in PA that its Big Brother unit is awesome, but it's too big to really travel with. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do an equipment fundraiser. You tell me. Tell me if you're interested in that. and then I could, you know, take enough gear with me to hopefully get a program or two out while I'm gone. Yeah, maybe Mondays or something like that. Or I don't entirely know how exactly it'll work, but that's out there for consideration. But just a general reminder, as at present, I will be gone from the air from April Fool's Day to the 11th or 12th of April. And how about that? Our buddy Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy, says, my birthday falls on Easter Sunday this year. Happens once in a lifetime. How cool is that? Is it really once in a lifetime, Steve? Never? Not even once? Because it's all tied up with phases of the moon. Yeah, it probably is pretty rare. I mean, I've got a better chance of having my birthday fall on Super Bowl Sunday. That's happened two or three times. you guys had a good weekend too, didn't you? I can see that the neurons are quite snappy. Steve in New York says the Big Brother unit. Can we nickname it the Orwell? Well, why not? And the Little Brother unit, I don't know what we'll call it. Famous Little Brothers. We'll have to work on that. But that's where things stand. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, we got 3:23 to finish the evening and get some bills paid, which would be freaking awesome. And, you know, month to month, week to week, we keep this program on the air. That having been said, it is, of course, Moran Monday. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Moran Monday, and we've got... we got a boatload, so I'd say that the sooner we get started, probably the better off we are.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Ah, yes, there it is. It fills my heart with joy every time I hear the Calliope begin its halcyon song. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, 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 indeed. Friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, kiddies and cousins. Here, just a few steps off the Carnival Midway, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, reside an entire host of Morans. We've got them all for you. We do. We really, really do. We've got them. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, perchers, baggers, booger eaters, maggots, trumpanzees, libertarians, republicans, all manner of Morans, and some even from outside that genus and species and phylum. Oh, yes, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. But the fact of the matter is, while you're throwing your money away over there pitching ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope of bringing home a little baby iguana that will someday grow to the size of a Volkswagen and probably eat you, well, you could be over here. That's right, for less than 50 cents per program, for a $10 a month subscribers, you get every kind of Moran imaginable every Monday, and, well, frankly, during other parts of the week as well. Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. The subscription is right over there at headon.live. Click the little box in the Contribute tab, and you'll be off and running. Now, we have a general reminder for anyone entering the Moran Monday tent. Recall, friends and neighbors, to keep a close eye and even a hand on purses, wallets, bracelets, earrings, necklaces, eyebrow piercings, European-style messenger bags, children, small animals, even that iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, because after all, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. You will. You really, really will. And we got lots of morality this evening, but let's start with sort of a happy ending moran. It happened, I think. Oh, by the way, we have a name for the little brother unit that we're talking about. The little brother unit would be the Winston. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Steve's definitely banging on all eight cylinders this moran Monday. We'll start with the generic non-political was it a zoo in the general San Diego area where a woman decided, and this is one of those places where you have a hard time sorting out the level of morality gone wrong. Because this is just some breathtaking stupid. No, it wasn't. It wasn't San Diego. It was Phoenix. Phoenix, Arizona, which probably explains a lot. Phoenix has a wildlife world zoo, aquarium, and safari park. And one of their attractions is as the British say, a jaguar. Around here, we just call them jaguars. The ancient Mayans revered them, and their word, I believe, in one of the dialects that is carved on stelae throughout the Central American region where the Mayan civilization held sway for a hell of a lot longer than this country's been here, they called him or her Chanbalam. Chanbalam. It was the biggest cat, I believe, in the Central American jungle. They are, of course, endangered today. And maybe it was the fact that it's an endangered species that caused a woman there at Wildlife World Zoo Aquarium and Safari Park, that's quite the mouthful if I'm going to have to say it several times, to decide she needed a selfie with a jaguar. Yeah. And it wasn't enough to say, here, kitty, 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 while you're holding your selfie up with your phone, waiting for Chanbalam to get over there. No, 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 no. The woman went over the barrier to take a selfie with a big predator cat. Oh, she's such a fuzzy little bit. Oh, yes, it's a precious. It's a fucking jaguar, lady. Yeah. And the jaguar apparently, I don't know, maybe it was an Amish jaguar that was afraid that if you took its picture, you'd steal its soul. I don't know. But the jaguar did not take too kindly to having her in the enclosure, or perhaps the jaguar was just feeling a mite peckish and decided she looked like a tasty snack. But jaguars have long, nasty, and sharp claws, and it got hold of her. And it's only the fact that it is a great big kitty cat that eventually saved the life of the woman, because somebody else rushed up and began shaking a water bottle over, and the kitty cat went, huh? Meow. And went and let go, and they were able to get her over, but the cat had ripped the shit out of her arm. Yeah, honest to God, I don't usually go in for the stories about stupid lawsuits. You know how white wingers, Republicans, libertarians, etc. You know how they love to I can't even remember how many years ago it was that it happened. But the woman who got third degree burns on her genitals from McDonald's too hot coffee, they're still talking about that. But I hope there's no lawsuit out of this. But there's some good news, like I said. It has a happy ending. The idiot lived. And I mean, really, the Moran lived. Can we all agree that if you crawl, if you scramble over a barrier into a wild animal enclosure that has a predator cat in it, that you're a Moran? I mean, sure, I got all the sympathy in the world. It's got to hurt, like, but she's a Moran. And I'm going to be deeply upset if she sues, but it has a happy ending because the Phoenix Zoo has announced that they aren't, because for some reason or another, this is something that zoos do. If an animal hurts a human, they kill the animal. Well, Darlene from in Connecticut just wrote in and said, hopefully they won't euthanize the jaguar for this woman's stupidity. She probably will sue the zoo. Sue the zoo. Man, that's got real lyric potential. But they have announced that they are not going to kill the jaguar because it was not the fault of the jaguar that she caused the jaguars to behave like jaguars have behaved since way back when the humans in the region were considered to be tasty snacks that didn't require all that much running and jumping in order to catch them. So no, the jaguar gets to live, at least until such time as Julius Geezer finds out that the Moran was a maggot and then starts tweeting rage tweets at the fucking jaguar. The hell are you talking about, Steve? Is this Handle on the Law? That nobody's ever had this much fun on Handle on the Law. No way. Robert in Australia pointing out, and the woman wins third place in the Darwin Awards. No green screen shops at the mall where you can get a fake selfie with a jaguar? We have them here. Well, the technology just hasn't caught up yet. But like I said when I first heard about this story, sometimes you just buy the fucking postcard at the gift shop. And there's Randy in PA. I bet she will sue the zoo for only a dollar. As long as it comes with attorney's fees, right? Oh, God, yeah. So, look, I just figured that would be a good Moran to get started with. Because I think we can have consensus on this, that anybody who goes over the bear, and because we're not talking about a kid. We're talking about a full-grown adult who wanted a goddamn selfie. I didn't realize it until I was reading the stories about it this weekend, but there's even a neologism that goes with this. It's called selfie-side. People who are so obsessed with themselves and taking a picture of themselves in a certain location that they wind up accidentally committing suicide, you know, backing off a cliff, falling off a mountain, falling into icy frozen waters and getting swept away by floods, or, you know, attacked by a jaguar. Selfie side. In fact, the person who was describing it said, we really need to pay more attention to it and start putting up signage. You know, careful about careful with that axe, Eugene. Your selfie may be the last thing that you ever do. Monique pointing out, if only Junior and Eric did this on one of their safaris and Secret Service looked away for a second. Yeah, the classic, oops, I do believe I've forgotten my fudge, Bugs Bunny move. Yeah, I can't imagine there would be a whole lot of grief, at least not among decent people. So Jerry and Shelley wanted to let us know that World Wildlife Zoo is about 5 miles from their house in Surprise, Arizona, not in San Diego. Yeah, I caught up with that. Thank you. Thanks, Shelley. Appreciate it. Let's see, note coming in from from Jimmy in the Great Northwest. Wait a minute, early cowbell for Jimmy. What's her name? Jaguar Jenny. If she hasn't been before, she is now. Flavio says she apologized to the zoo after the hospital released her. Has she never heard of Crocodile Dundee, the guy who was killed by a stingray he got close to? No, that wasn't Crocodile Dundee. That was Steve Irwin. Steve Irwin, the crocodile, had a stingray spawn right in a hat. Ah, look at this stingray. It's just, ow! Oh, yeah, right. That was, no, Crocodile Dundee was Paul, what's his name? That's not a knife. That's a knife. That one. This concludes my bad Australian accent portion of the program. I apologize to all the Australian members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Man, Steve's feeling his oats this evening. Steve from Georgia Stan. As we transcend into faces of death. Come on. Les says, Moran logic. But T'Challa seems so friendly in the movie. you guys were as anxious for the program to start as I was, weren't you? Yeah, because I've been kind of itching. It's been that kind of week. I mean, it was beautiful. Oh, it was so beautiful yesterday. I went out, took a walk in the woods. I saw jonquils coming up. You might call them daffodils. A huge cluster of them in a sunny spot in the woods. It's like there was just this hole in the canopy, and the sun was streaming down, and where the sun was landing, woof, a huge cluster of jonquils had come up, signaling the coming of spring. I bet you if I go back in a couple of days, I'll see the first few ramps poking their little leafy rhizomes, I don't know, through the soil. Yeah, it's nice. Beautiful. And it works wonders. It works wonders for my attitude. Tomorrow, sunny skies and 50. Oh, but the clouds and the rain come in Wednesday and Thursday. But Thursday, I might be able to make some happy out of Thursday because it's going to be cloudy, but it's going to be 70 with a low of 54. I mean, 50, 63, 70. I think we're looking at a good, rock, solid Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of naked radio here. So I could not be happier. All right, that's enough of that. We've got other stupid to attend to. And it's probably, well, it's going to be political stupid. So, you know, our more typical Moran stuff. Like, for instance, Julius Geezer. I mean, not earth-shattering or anything, but the Tim Apple business. He actually tried, speaking to maggot donors, who, of course, are Atne Ute Aitbre, if you One what I mean, may. What's that, Scott in San Diego? Re Jaguar Jenny. A selfie with an effing Jaguar? Come on, lady. Zoo spokesman clawed horribly. Oh, damn. Yeah. Might have taken a minute. I was too busy laughing. You might not have. Zoo spokesman clawed horribly. Suggested the park visitor was, well, irretrievably stupid. Clawed horribly. Oh, you're going to smoke a turd in hell for that one, Scott. But it was well worth it. Yeah, but anyway, the Tim Apple business. And just for the recap. It was Tim Cook shows up. And because Julius Geezer's very good brain isn't working very good, he referred to Tim Cook as Tim Apple and then tried to convince maggot donors who are, again, at ne ute aitbre, if you own a what I mean, may, that he didn't really say Tim Apple. He said Tim Cook of Apple, but he just said Cook of really fast, and nobody heard it because he said it really low. Even though the cameras were on him, and you can, in the famous words of George H.W. Bush, read his lips. I mean, Jesus. Don't believe your lying eyes. Believe only what I tell you, for I am your dear leader.
Then uses. Jeff Bezos, to name a few. And in a meeting with CEOs of the White House yesterday, the president had this for one of the country's most prominent executives, Tim Cook.
You've really put a big investment in our country. We appreciate it very much, Tim Apple.
Yeah. Did you hear? I mean, I didn't, I confess. But, you know, I could have put that in an audio editor. And if Tim Cook from Apple was in there, it would have showed up in the waveform. Or whatever you call it. It would have been there. I could have taken the space between Tim and Apple and amplified it by, you know, 100 dB. And it would have rung out across the countryside. Cook from. It ain't there. Goddamn dumbass thinks that his followers are so stupid, and they may be, that he'll believe them instead of their own lying ears and eyes. And, you know, he put it in print. He put it on, of course, Twitter.
At a recent roundtable meeting of business executives, and long after formally introducing Tim Cook of Apple, I quickly referred to Tim plus Apple as Tim Apple, as an easy way to save time and words. The fake news was disparagingly all over this, and it became another bad Trump story.
It's silly, and it's... well, I mean, trivial. But it's also, look, silly, trivial things like what not, you know, let's just say that it is further evidence of the mental degradation of whatever it is that is in those thin gray settlings that slosh around between Donald Trump's ears and pass for brains. As Irish Dave points out, Jonathan Swan at Axios says one donor told him, I just thought, why would you lie about that? It doesn't even matter. By the way, hi, I'm Bob Horn. Stephen, New York notes, brain not working very good. Hello, Bob. You have to use an adverb there. It's brain not working very goodly. You're absolutely right. Rightly, I think. I don't know. Oh, okay. No, Randy in PA is peeved. What? I don't get a cowbell for my horrible Joey Zuzu quotation? But Joe Isuzu's been gone for a while. It took me a minute, okay? Yes, Stephen, New York notes, one cannot hear what isn't there. I mean, you know, what is the sound of one maggot thinking? Jesus, that's the kind of quan that would make Zen monks take up sniffing glue. Jesus. And then there's melanoma. You know how we've got, there's this mindset out there, I don't subscribe to it, but there are a lot who do, that somehow or another, melanoma is this long-suffering, poor, captive soul. She's fucking Rapunzel in the goddamn castle, just waiting for her hair to grow out long enough so that some prince can climb up the tower and rescue her. But I don't want to marry Princess Lookie. I've never subscribed to that because as far back as 2011, she was standing right there next to Donald, hustling the birther racist trope against Barack Obama. But according to a report in New York Magazine, the former foreign minister of Australia, Julie Bishop, told a story about the time that she met melanoma. And she said, in the New York Magazine story, Melania, standing by, assumed David was the foreign minister, and she said to me, Julie, will you be coming to my lady's lunch tomorrow? And I said, nah, David's going to the partner's lunch. She thought about that for a while, thinking, why would Australia's foreign minister come to the partner's lunch? So this went on for a while until the president explained that I was the foreign minister. And she told that at the Adelaide Festival this past Saturday. Julie Bishop was in Julie Australia. No, Julie Austria. Let's just go for the gusto here. Julie Austria said that she told that story at the Adelaide Festival. Mm-hmm. And she was foreign minister from 2013 to 2018. Time enough for maybe melanoma to have noticed, but melanoma didn't notice because a woman's place is back in the penthouse in New York City, not living in this dump in Washington, D.C. is nasty here. I think we've started something here. Renee in D.C. with observation. Just wondering if Trump responds to Mr. Kremlin, President Putin, etc. Oh, this could be a game for the evening. What else... That would be Prince Bonesaw of Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Feel free to share your other thoughts along those lines. But so much for be best. You know, it's kind of odd, though. She was raised in a Soviet satellite state of sorts where women were less subject to, they had to go to work in the workers' paradise just like everybody else. Let's put it that way. But somehow or another, when the word foreign minister is presented to her, melanoma automatically thinks of some dude. Maybe because it's some dude who might pay her to take her clothes off for him. I don't know. Oh, come on, Bob, says Darlene in Connecticut. The Av was in there. You simply can't believe your lying ears and lying eyes. P.S. I'd pay $1,000 to see Monique's wish come to fruition with Eric and Don Jr., unarmed, getting thrown into that paddock with the Jag. Sort of like the Colosseum glory days of Rome.
All right, dude. We're getting a Jaguar. Dude, no. Yes. No, dude.
Darlene continues, that Jag would exact some retribution for all the animals Beavis and Butthead killed on safari, thinking in particular of Don Jr. holding that severed tail of an elephant. Yep. And P.S., it was croc wrestler, croc harasser Steve Irwin who was impaled through the heart by the stinger of a stingray. Nature has its way of exacting revenge in the most weird and unusual ways, doesn't it? Well, yeah, especially when you kind of invite it to. I mean, look. Oh, you want to talk about weird, though? Okay, so there's no spoilers involved with this. But I recently watched the new Amazon Prime series. No, I didn't. We did. The boss and I. Agnes. Nighttime viewing. Post-show viewing. We watched the new series, The Widow. And it was interesting. I don't know how you'd make that. I'm thinking it's a one-season, one-off. But there was a lot of stuff. If you wanted to write a real critical, be a critique about it. But it was middling. It was average. It was enjoyable-ish. And the thing is, once you're three or four in and you know there's only 10, you go, fuck, I gotta finish this. So we did. So no spoilers. But I just find it very, very weird that 2 days after we finish, because read the book. I don't know, the universe, the goddess of irony, who can say? But, and this is, like I said, this is not a spoiler. But the thing that propels the action of the whole story is a plane crash of an imaginary airliner, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And the plane that crashes is a Boeing 737. And, of course, over the weekend, 157 souls were lost when a Boeing 737 crashed. An Ethiopian Airlines Boeing 737 crashed in route to Nairobi in Kenya. Which, of course, follows on the heels of another crash of, what, Indonesian Air? And a Boeing 737. It was just kind of weird. The degree of specificity. But then you also have to wrap into that the fact that Boeing recently put Nimrata Haley, a woman so ineffably stupid that she was tricked into thinking, by the Moscow Morning Zoo crew team, she was tricked into thinking she was talking to the president of Poland, and the Morning Zoo crew team from Moscow got her to acknowledge the diplomatic problems with a fake island nation. Well, she's on the Boeing board now. It's almost enough to make you think that, and the goddess of irony is not known for her mercifulness, but it's almost enough to make you think that the goddess of irony might object to putting an idiot on an airplane company's board. And the other thing I started worrying about, because or wondering about, Indonesia, China, Ethiopia, they've all grounded their Boeing 737 MAX aircraft, and a lot of them are brand-ass new. I don't know where they're built. But it did occur to me to wonder, since Nimrata Haley has been put on the board, if maybe there was a chance that those brand-spanking-new 737s might have been built in South Carolina with non-union labor. Do you hear the upspeak? Why am I upspeaking? I don't know. But maybe there's some value to be had out of union membership and paying people a living wage and not trying to build aircraft on the cheap in a scab state. Maybe the goddess of irony thinks that way. Yeah, we've got a couple of aircraft fans in the Horn Family Community Congregation. regarding 737 crash, Brother Deacon Asa says, okay, Bob, now you're working the Alex Jones corner, and you know he don't like that. Take a number, Alex. You're busy being sued by your old pal Jerome Corsi at the moment. But one of the things that was brought up in the news stories about the 737 crash over the weekend is that it could have come down, the Indonesians think this, it could have failed because of a sensor that caused the nose to pitch downward and they couldn't get out of it. A lot of these more modern aircraft are described as fly-by-wire, which means that the computer and not the human being does a whole lot of the flying. So if your sensor goes boogity and decides to point the nose down, you might not be able to pull it back up, you know? So there's, well, Boeing's a moron. Yeah, even without the plane crashes, Boeing would be a moron for putting Nimrata Haley on its board. Jesus, what are you people thinking? What are you going to do when she takes a call from the Moscow Morning Zoo crew pretending to be the CEO of Airbus offering a merger with Boeing? Huh? What are you going to do, Boeing? Well, this was bound to happen. Irish Dave pointing out to Bob, quit telling us where to build our Boeing 737s. So we've got that. And then, more ends everywhere, nor anyone to think. Yeah. If you have not yet read... Wait, what? Arnold? Arnold says, is there audio? Do you mean of the Morning Zoo crew call? Yeah. I was probably the only broadcaster who devoted an entire three-hour program to Nimrata Haley getting punked by the Moscow Morning Zoo crew and acknowledging the existence of an imaginary island nation called Bonobo, or something like that. Oh, what was the name of the island nation? Was it Bonobo? What else, though? If you have not read the Mother Jones story from the weekend about Li Yang, you should probably make a point of doing it. Oh, Arnold, I couldn't begin. Okay, here's a full service radio program. We're gonna take a minute and sort this out. What you want to do is search for UN Ambassador Nikki Haley fooled by prank radio, or fooled by radio prank, or something like that. Go and find when the story breaks, and then start wandering around the archives of this program, and you'll find it. Because Arnold says, the hell was I that? What night was that? And you were probably taking a break. But anyway, back to Li Yang. You know, it was Friday on the front porch when we were talking about how she, Zelig and or Forrest Gump-like, seemed to have a special power for showing up in photographs with famous Republicans, from Don Jr. to Don Sr. to, well, you've seen him by now. Oh, here, let me interrupt this for a minute, because this is a question. Greg Greg says, I want to become a monthly subscriber. How do I specify the 13th of the month? Well, what you do, Greg, is make yourself a little reminder right now and go do it on the 13th through the interface at headon.live. And then it'll happen on the 13th, and then it'll happen every month on the 13th. And you, Greg, will become the first compadre alongside Gary and Gaia, and they'll be tickled pink to hear it. So that would be PayPal, not Patreon. All the Patreons come out on the first of the month. And I've got some Patreon thank yous to give out as we get toward the end of the month. But anyway, Li Yang was the owner of the Rub and Tug chain that got taken down and may have, for all we know, involved human trafficking. She, for instance, was photographed with Trump at his recent Super Bowl party. And, of course, it was her massage parlor where Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, went for a quickie cheap rub and tug. That phrase, just that phrase. But here's the far more interesting part. And I'm not sure who the Moran nominee is in this. I think it's probably obviously the maggots themselves. You know, the ones with all those highfalutin, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian values, who voted for the guy with three wives and with the five kids by three baby mamas. Right, those maggots. Well, it turns out that not only was she and again, sexism in language, just something to ponder. Why do we have a separate word that sounds far more genteel for women who run prostitution rings as opposed to men? Everybody knows the really sleazy, shitty connotations that come with the word pimp. So why does a woman who does it get the French term for a married woman, madame? Why isn't Li Yang just a pimp like all the other pimps? But that's just language. There's probably a reason. But it turns out she wasn't just the pimp for a string of rub-and-tug parlors. She has a second life, if you will. Li Yang is an officer and thereby an agent of two groups who are essentially controlled by the Communist Party of the People's Republic of China. Oh, I know, in 2019, who gives a damn? Big deal, so what? But I am inexorably tied to history for as long as I can remember it. And so when maggots, Republicans, give a pass to a president who swells around with a pimp involved in human, probably involved in human trafficking, my memory torments me. Because all I can hear is radio. It's like that DJ thing I've told you about that happens in my head. I can call up just about any song that I dare to remember, and it's like inside my head is an MP3 player. I can hear the opening bass line of the Eagles, One of These Nights. I can hear the clicks in the tracks of the 8-track tape, in the channel changing in some songs. And yes, I can hear snippets of White Wing hate radio that I used to listen for lack of anything else to hear as I ran up and down the highways and byways of West Virginia back when I had to travel a lot for my work. And so when I read the Mother Jones story about Li Yang, the massage parlor pimp, being an agent of the Chinese Communist Party, and that she then used her ties to literally sell access to the President of the United States, to Chinese nationals who had business that they wanted to do. Well, the MP3 player in my head kicked in. Or somebody punched the button on the cart machine in my head. However you want to describe it. And so as a consequence, I hear from, Jesus, 23 years ago, that OxyContin gobbling freak, Rush Limbaugh, that lying junkie, the guy who dodged the draft because of a hair-filled cyst on his ass. Yes, dinner has officially been ruined in the Central Daylight Time Zone. Yes, I apologize. It's called a polandial cyst. Look it up. Do not look at the pictures. Don't look at the pictures. I'm telling you. Li Yang, by the way, goes by in the same sense that Piyush Jindal went by Bobby and Nimrata Haley went by Nikki. Li Yang, the pimp, goes by Cindy. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I heard... I heard Limbaugh from 23 years ago. My friends, it is absolutely unacceptable in this country today that Charlie Tree, a Chi-Com from Arkansas, has had almost unfettered access to William Jefferson Blythe Clinton. Obviously, this administration is entirely corrupted by the influence of the Chi-Coms. Because if he went off like that once, he went off 100 times. The Chi-Coms, my friends, with half my brain tied behind my back. Talent on loan from God, margin call, motherfucker. But it doesn't much matter. Cognitive dissonance does not exist for the maggots. Or if it does, it's completely subsumed underneath bias confirmation. Hell, Donald Trump could sell the Statue of Liberty to the Chinese, and they could put it on a boat and set it on set it up in Kowloon Harbor, and all we'd hear about was, "I got a great deal for it." But the fact of the matter is, and just as a general reminder, you don't have to have violations of law to have impeachment. There are some things that a president can do that are just so obnoxious that he just has to go. The Mother Jones story I'm looking at says, after Mother Jones on Saturday revealed that Yang, who goes by Cindy, had been peddling entree to the Trump family. The Trump White House and assorted GOP power brokers, national security experts, noted that this situation could pose a threat, presenting opportunities for espionage or blackmail targeting the president and his inner circle. They expressed concern that Yang's efforts to broker interactions with Trump and his clan could be exploited by Chinese intelligence. Susan Hennessy, a Brookings Institution fellow who previously worked as a National Security Agency lawyer, said, "Guess who has 100% known about this from the beginning? Chinese intelligence services." Samantha Vinograd, who was with CNN, was with the National Security Council during the Obama administration, said, "Our intel community has said China poses one of the most significant counterintelligence challenges. My money's on the Chinese government having at least picked up on Yang's access, if they didn't direct it." My money's on they directed it. Because the fucker in the White House is a simpleton. His brains don't work good. Meanwhile, the White House is clammed up. Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags has nothing to say about it. Nobody's returning emails or phone calls. Yeah. Now, to be fair, she sold the Robert Kraft Rub and Tug Spa back in 2013, but her family continues to own Rub and Tug Spas. She got really active in presidential politics in 2016, first throwing her support behind Jebbia, Please Clap Bush, and then bailing on him to jump on the maggot train. And since then has had unparalleled access, which she has in turn sold. Among other things, she is involved in a group whose purpose is to advocate for the absorption, or, hey, here's a word, assimilation of Taiwan into the government of the People's Republic of China. Arnold, I don't know where Rub and Tug came from, but it has been in use since this story broke about Robert Kraft. Among other things, Cindy Yang was part of the formation of the Florida-China Peaceful Reunification Promotion Association, the FPRPA, and it was given congratulations on its founding from the highest level of the CHICOMS. You can see how this might be a problem, but in the Trump regime, it's just another fucking day that ends in Y. Dave from Talibandiana. Bob, are you trying to open a full-time 24/7 shrine to the goddess of irony there in West Virginia? If the female pimp goes by Cindy, does that mean one of the Brady kids has gone bigly bad? Your buddy, Dave, from the blind. Well, I mean, it's like that old, that horrible old pun joke about the obscure bird named the Foo. I won't tell it. Trying not to, right. Although, I don't know. We got $323 to raise this evening. We're an hour into the program. I don't know where the time went. And we're still at zero. It would be nice if it came, if we came off zero a little bit. So he's been, he's not only been bought by the Russians, apparently the TRICOMs have their hooks in him too. I have to confess that morons going after each other is one of my favorite things. And it's even better when the morons going after each other are maggots in Talibama. Yeah, there's a war in the Republican Party in Talibama. See, the roads in Talibama are a damn mess. And they need to raise some of their own money. Mostly, Talibama sucks off the federal tit from taxes that are paid by states like California and New York and, you know, right. But sometimes they have to raise their own money, and they're looking at a 10-cent hike in the gasoline tax in Alabama. They haven't raised it since 1992. Yeah, since our eldest daughter was 3. And they rather badly need the money. And so as a result, the Republican Party, which has a supermajority in both houses of the Alabama legislature, is going to raise taxes. And it is driving the maggots up a tree. Forgive me if I say delightfully so. And of course, their side doesn't have Sparkle Fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigades. This is just the maggot purity brigade. And they're declaring who is and isn't sufficiently ideologically pure. By God, if there was a real live, honest to God Democratic Party in Alabama, this would be a time to exploit the weakness. But no, probably not. And what a pity. But it's being described as Alabama's GOP is being described as being on the verge of civil war. Nice to hear that said about Republicans for a change instead of them wanting to kill the rest of us. You know, I grew up in Lauderdale County, Alabama. And they've got a Republican there by the name of Ralph Long, who chairs the Stop the Alabama Gas Tax PAC. And he said, they're addressing in what most places would be called a progressive agenda. Mm-hmm. I guess because Ralph Long would rather drive on gravel roads. Then Republican State Representative Lynn Greer, who also represents part of that same county, Lauderdale. He's from out toward the eastern end of Lauderdale County, out toward Rogersville. Mm-hmm. Out there near Lauderdale County High School. Out on the way to the nuclear power plant there. But Greer said, because you have, you know, you gotta maintain your bona fides. I'm not anti-Tea Party, but we have to occasionally, for good education and highways, You need to bite the bullet and move forward. Of course, they're going to be at us. But the people you will get reelected 4 years from now are the people who are going to support this bill, in my opinion. The 10-cent gas tax hike made it out of the Alabama House. And sometime this week, the Alabama Senate will take it up. And boy, howdy, wouldn't it be cool if the Alabama Democratic Party had enough wherewithal to exploit the split? I mean, we saw what happened with the election, the special election regarding Roy Tola Moore. So the Stop the Alabama Gas Tax Pact put out a press release last week, including a directory of fake Republicans. All the House Republicans are in it, and fake Republican gets stamped over the eyes of 59 members of the House who voted to impose the 10-cent gasoline tax. They even went after Mac McCutcheon, the Speaker of the Alabama House, the bill's sponsor, Bill Poole of Tuscaloosa, and State Representative Lynn Greer of Rogersville. We heard from Lynn Greer. Oh, I love me some teabagging, but we gotta be able to fix the potholes once in a while. I mean, it ain't like when we're one of them Yankee states that gets a lot of snow and stuff, but shit. They got a reason to have potholes. We don't, but we got potholes just the same. Meanwhile, checking in with Jack in Shreveport. Madam, by the way, I've only heard this woman's name and not seen it in print yet. Does she spell it S-I-N-D-Y? Sin? No, sadly, it's only spelled with a C, but by God, it should be spelled with an S, Jack. Yeah, a little jingle for that. I don't think anybody's quite touched Claude Horribly yet, though. I mean, that's way at the top of this evening. Darlene in Connecticut with a note. Impeachment for things other than crimes, not according to Nancy Pelosi, my pick for More End Monday, along with Kirsten Gillibrand. No, Nancy thinks Trump is not worth it and that impeachment would be too divisive. I was pulling my hair out, and then I thought I was having a stroke shortly thereafter. If she'd said that impeachment is not worth it because the Senate won't convict and remove, then I could understand that and even go along with it. But no, there she goes again, sweeping to the rat-infested, sewage-filled gutter, the one thing our founders gave us to address a constitutional crisis. Can someone just point that out to her? Just point out that the American people can handle impeachment? If not Trump, then who? And boy, howdy, do I understand that. I read that story earlier today. And I'm trying to be my Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, Little Ray of Sunshine Best, when I say that, is it possible, Darlene, that that was part of her calculation? That there's no sense in performing a futile act when, hell, Mitch McConnell might not even let it be heard? I mean, I don't want to think that she's just willing to, or maybe the calculation's what we've talked about here. That if you impeach him and you have hearings, well, you're impeaching him right smack dab in the middle of a presidential campaign, and that's only going to embolden him. Jesus, he's already out there hollering. Democrats hate all the Jews. And in fact, Jim Acosta got into it with Jethreen, White House Press Secretary spokesperson Jethreen Bodine, who can't seem to find a day job now that she's polluted her resume with all the lying that she's done for Julius Geiser.
Definitely hate all the Jews. Definitely hate all the Jews.
Damn. Lee in New York, subject line, gas tax. Tax breaks don't pay for themselves. Reducing revenue does not give more revenue. I guess those billionaires have not been trickling enough on the budget. Guess they need more. Well, once again, I return to my thesis. What would the South look like if it could ever just once for a little bit of time experience good governance? But I mentioned White House spokes creep Jethreen Bodine. And it's worth the effort to hear the exchange between CNN's Jim Acosta and Jethreen, just to see how desperate she is to not address, you know, the great big freaking elephant in the room that's shitting on the podium. So, here we go.
Back to John and Halleck's question about the president's comments about Democrats and Jewish people. Isn't that kind of rhetoric just sort of beneath everybody? And do you think that the president has thought at all going into this 2020 campaign that the rhetoric just needs to be lowered, whether it's talking about Democrats, the media, immigrants? Or should we just plan on hearing the president use the same kind of language that we heard in 2016 and all through the first couple of years of this administration?
Okay, that's a fair question, Jim Acosta. Is he going to continue to be a shithead, or is he going to act like a human being and maybe even marginally like a president? Good question. The answer, however, will compel us all to reach for our handy-dandy horn hockey pucks and get a good couple of loops of duct tape around our heads.
I think that the real shame in all of this is that Democrats are perfectly capable of coming together and agreeing on the fact that they're comfortable ripping babies straight from a mother's womb or killing a baby after birth.
Jethreen, he didn't ask you about whether or not we wanted barbecued baby for lunch. He asked you about whether or not the president's going to continue to engage in the hateful rhetoric for which he has become so well known. Did she have to completely like throw the transmission to dry shift into reverse there to get to the baby eating?
They have a hard time condemning the type of comments from Congresswoman Omar. I think that is a great shame. The president has been clear on what his position is, certainly what his support is for the people and the community of Israel.
The community of Israel? Israel's a community now, is it? I mean, like, I don't know. Fraser's Bottom, West Virginia, is a community? Again with the upspeak? This is getting confusing.
Down the rhetoric in the debate when you're saying something that's just patently untrue. I mean, obviously
stating their policy positions.
Democrats don't hate Jewish people. It's just silly. It's not true.
I think they should call out their members by name, and we've made that clear. I don't have anything further.
After Charlottesville, saying that there are very fine people on both sides in Charlottesville, essentially suggesting that there are very fine people in the Nazis.
That's not at all what the president was stating. Not at any point. The president has been incredibly clear and consistently and repeat.
Goddess of irony note. Siren. Yes, he's been incredibly clear. I try to be careful with the use of incredible and incredibly, because we somehow have appended a modern meaning to it that means super duper extra double plus, right? Credo, cratera, Cratum, I think, or maybe Cratum, is the Latin word for believe. The most dangerous language, the most dangerous word, by the way, in the Latin language, just like it is in English. So isn't incredible to be unbelievable? When you put incredible in front of a word, doesn't it mean that it is not to be believed? And the modern English meaning of it being that it is so earth-shattering, so stupendous that you can't help but believe it? But at its root, doesn't it mean that whatever comes after incredible should not be taken to heart? Is not subject to intellectual or fact-based proof?
Repeatedly condemned hatred, bigotry, racism in all of its forms, whether it's in America or anywhere else, and to say otherwise is simply untrue.
You know, except for that time that he tweeted out Hillary Clinton's picture in a Star of David next to a stack of money, or the time that he spoke to a Jewish group and said, I like to make deals just like you like to make deals. I like money just like you like money. What the... But oh well. It's Jethreen Bodine. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Hey, big thanks to Jack in Shreveport. Jack just took us, got us off the Schneid and took us down to just a minute. 273 to go. Thank you, Jack. Thank you very kindly. That's huge. 273 to go to finish the evening. Thank you, Jack. Hopefully you will have some company in short order. Yeah, where Jethreen wanting the Democrats to call people out by name is concerned. Brother Deacon Asa says, we'll call them out by name when you call your president out by name, you filthy... Yes. Jethreen Bodine. Proud alumna of Bug Tussle Tech and Herpetological Seminary. Sure. That is by no means the end of the Morans. I would guess that there's a decent chance that Scott in San Diego has more ends of his own. Do you, Scott?
Who's that little chatterbox? The one with all the curly locks. Who could it be? It's Jethreen Huckabee Sanders.
Or Bodine.
Oh, God. I don't know. I don't think I've got morons today, do I? No, I don't, really. We're on a higher plane today. I know it's not in keeping with the spirit of the theme of the Monday broadcast, but I got good stuff.
Oh, wait. Okay, before we get into the good stuff, I have a cowbell to award.
Uh-huh.
Our buddy Scary Jerry in Florida. Subject line, Israel, it's a gated community. Yes. Yeah, that's very good.
Now, first of all, I must give credit where credit is due for the name Claude Orably. And you seem to take great delight in that name.
Oh, in the course of a story about a moron getting clawed horribly by a jaguar.
That was a name that I heard Steve Allen use, or read that he had used, referring to a lion tamer at the Clyde Beatty Circus. Claude Orbley. And it seemed to fit, so I'm glad that it gave you giggles.
Steve Allen, that's going back a ways.
Yeah, that is, but I loved watching him when
Memories, I was a kid. Memories, all alone in the moonlight.
You know, he was the first host of what is still known as The Tonight Show on NBC, just a shadow of its former glory. But after he left The Tonight Show, well, actually, he did The Tonight Show for several years, and then NBC wanted him to do a Sunday night show up against Ed Sullivan, and he got trounced in the ratings. But it was an alternative. It was a standard 60s variety show, but he got trounced by Sullivan, who, you know, who owned that time slot. But anyway, then in the early 60s, he did a syndicated late-night show for Westinghouse Broadcasting. And we're talking early 60s, and that was one of the great things about going down to Aunt Emma's on Friday night to spend the night. She'd let me stay up late and watch the Steve Allen syndicated show, which went head-to-head against Carson back in those days. So I've always been a fan of Steve Allen, a true liberal, by the way, in the old school mold of liberals. So hats off to Steve Marino. Where to begin? I have got a TV viewing tip, but you've got to go to Amazon Prime Video. And it's not streaming as a freebie. It'll cost you a couple of bucks. But over this past weekend, my cable system offered a free preview weekend of Stars, you know, the movie channel.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got like a dozen different channels under the Stars banner. And I was flipping through.
Oh, Stars banner? Was that on purpose? Because that's good.
Well, I didn't mean it that way, but I'll take it. But anyway, when I found out that they were offering the free preview weekend of Stars, I went through the on-screen cable guide to see if there was anything I wanted to DVR for viewing later. And among the offerings was a 2017 documentary that I had heard of but had never seen. 2017 documentary, Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. There was and continues to be a gentleman by the name of Scotty Bowers in Hollywood. He was born in 1923, and according to Wikipedia, he's still upright and above ground, though not working in his former profession. He was essentially a procurer for the glitterati of Hollywood back in from the 40s through the 80s. I guess if he had a motto, it would be, if we don't have it, you didn't need it to begin with. He would hook up men and women alike with things to appeal to their preferences and sexual appetites. And he initially worked out of an ARCO station, an Atlantic Richfield station at Hollywood Boulevard and Van Ness, I believe it was. And I'm telling you, Bob, you might, if you see this, it's on Amazon Prime for like $3.99. Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. You will be tempted as you watch it not to believe that one man could have had his fingers, so to speak, in so many pies in terms of rubbing elbows and other things with the rich and famous in Hollywood. But apparently, he is not without veracity. And it's a wonder he reached. Well, let's see. If he was born in 23, he would have been my dad's age. So what would that make him? 1923 till now. I'm not good at ciphering.
96.
Well, there you go. But and this film was from 2 years ago, and he looked damn good then.
Well, Hung Like Jesus, I mean, says, I saw it and it was incredible.
And it's kind of based on his book called Full Service, which, if that ain't a good name for the subject matter, I don't know what is. So I plan to get the book, and I'm saving the DVR'd documentary because it bears watching again. So check that sucker out, if you will.
Well, I was gonna mention something to you because you had brought up the documentary film Dark Money.
Yeah.
I found that it's just now showing at SXSW, you know, mm-hmm. South by Southwest, the festival. And
that's weird.
Well, no, not Dark Money. There's a film, a new documentary that just showed at South by Southwest. And it's by the same producer, or at least one of them, who did Dark Money.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one to write down in your day planner or whatever. Keep an eye out for ...
Okay.
And I don't have the name of the film.
Let me see, write this down. Watch for upcoming Bob Doesn't Know the Name of the Film. Okay,
it's a documentary about Molly Ivins.
Oh God, that'll be great.
Yeah,
I loved her.
I'll be on that like a duck on a June bug.
God, I wish she was still around. Can you imagine the fun making and scoffing?
Yeah, I don't know. See, she pretty much got through the W regime. I don't know if she could handle. I say the same thing about people like Joe Bagent, Kurt Vonnegut, Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. I don't know if anybody is really capable of taking the piss out of this administration any more than the people who already are. Yeah. I don't know if you caught the clip from John Oliver's program this weekend, but his takedown of Trump signing Bibles
was for
the ages.
Yeah. I have a signed New Testament signed by Bob Harrington, the chaplain of Bourbon Street.
I think we have talked about this in the past somewhere out there, if it hasn't been lost, and you remember the Living Bible?
Oh, yes.
I have a Living Bible that was signed by, and I have to look up his name.
Okay.
By Tom Lester.
Oh, Ebb of Green Acres.
Good for you. Wait.
Yeah.
Cowbell for, yeah. It was like
which,
the...
Which, by the way, is on either Netflix or Amazon Prime for free if you're a subscriber.
Oh, yes, it is.
And
yeah,
watching it.
We now have a title. We now have a title, courtesy of Ralph's.
All right.
Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins.
Brilliant.
And it got huge, huge good reviews at SXSW.
Well, I will watch for it, because if it's anywhere near as good as Dark Money was, it'll be a spectacular film to view.
The church that I grew up in.
I was just going to say, what were the circumstances where Tom Lester was in proximity to you where he could sign your Living Bible?
The church that I grew up in was having its, like, I don't know, 30th or 50th anniversary, some sort of celebration, and they brought him in to share his witness, to testimony. And everybody lined up, and we got our Bible signed. We see, a lot of people were shocked that Baptists would line up to get their Bibles autographed. I wasn't.
No, it's It's not an unusual thing.
It's the signing of the front of the Bible. It's the fact that they didn't open it up and sign it because Tom Lester opened it up a couple of pages and signed it.
Yeah.
Of course, I had a really nifty Living Bible. It had a green Naugahyde cover with gold letters, and it was padded.
Yeah, I had that same one back then.
But those were the circumstances, and he's still around. He's 80 now.
Yeah, I think he's the only cast member main cast member that's still with us. God, that show was funny.
Oh, I don't think there's a better example of surreal comedy of the 60s.
And you know why, don't you?
Well, Paul Henning.
Yeah, who had a connection to the Burns and Allen TV show, and maybe even the radio
and
show.
Burns and Allen was the absolute acme of surrealism of 50s TV.
George
just threw the fourth wall right out the window.
Well, his magic TV used to crack me up in his den. He had upstairs from the house, he had a den or an office, and he had a big old console television set. And as the story would proceed, he would turn on the TV and comment on what was going on in the show. I mean, God, great, great stuff. Give me that name again of the Molly Ivins documentary.
It is Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins.
Well, I will check that out.
And the review I read about it took an interesting angle because it described the fact that to the social media generation, who's Molly Ivins? And there are people who are going to be absolutely gobsmacked to know that people like this existed in the world.
Yeah, relatively recently too.
One of the things the article referenced was the time that after the sodomy statute had been struck down by the Supreme Court of the United States, when two members of the Texas legislature sought successfully to reintroduce a sodomy statute, Molly Ivins said that the sergeant of arms should probably take them both into custody because under the present amendments, it was illegal for a prick to touch an asshole.
Give Molly a cowbell in the great beyond.
Yeah, a cowbell in the great beyond, absolutely.
Jesus.
I just sat and smiled merrily at that. So, I thought you'd like to know about that.
I will look for that. But you mentioned that when the ruling came down to strike down the sodomy laws, the Supreme Court decided it. They asked Popeye the Sailor Man for comment, and he said, well, blow me down. But anyway, smoke some more spinach, Popeye.
Yeah.
Another.
By the way, that was a great photo. That was a great photo of you with Willard Scott.
Thank you. Thank you.
You look a little like Warren Zevon in that picture, Scott.
Do I?
I thought you did.
Well, this was in the mid-80s, and I was dating the woman who later became my first wife, and we had been up most of the night at our own little personal freakers ball, and we took a little nap because I told her the night before that Willard was going to be in Kansas City the next morning. He was at the time doing the weather cut-ins for Today Show, and he was in Kansas City for the Future Farmers of America convention. And I said, why don't we go down to the convention center or wherever it was and say hello to Willard, and you'll get to meet him, because I knew him from my D.C. days. So we trundled on down there took a little nap and trundled on down there early the next morning. And there was a sort of a crowd gathered at the perimeter of where he was broadcasting his weather cut-ins from. And we were kind of in the front. And he kept looking at me, and he'd get this look on his face like, I know that person, but I don't. The context wasn't right because we were in Kansas City, not D.C. So finally, during a break, I walked up. I said, hi, Willard. And he said, Scotty, you know, and he knew me once, you know, he was able to process it. And I introduced him to, you know, to my lady friend, and she took a picture of us. But I hadn't been told that I looked like Warren.
Maybe it was just the whole mid-80s vibe. Maybe that's what it was.
Well, it might have been. But he's a sweetheart. I love Willard.
Well, I'm in trouble again, Scott. I just got a note from Arnold's beloved Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl here. Now, let's remember, Uncle Bob says some words that should not be used by children who are being raised right. So just, you know, just a reminder, Cheryl here, you said shithead, and Ann says to the radio, shithead? Don't say that, Bob. Sorry, Cheryl. Probably not the last time. It's time for the Bob talk.
You said a bozo no-no, Bob.
I did say a bozo no-no. Yes, I did.
And that's topically correct because Willard was D.C.'s bozo, which is actually how I first met him, as a mere prat of a child, maybe age 6 or 7.
We're all bozos on this bus.
We sure as hell are. And I've met the Fire Sign Theater, too. I'm telling you, Bob, when I think about the people with whom I have crossed paths over the years, there are some I've actually forgotten. You know? But we are indeed bozos on this fucking bus. Jesus. Let me give you another TV viewing tip.
Yes.
But it will require a purchase because I haven't been able to find it streaming on any of the normal services. And it's a documentary I saw maybe 10 years ago called Smiling Through the Apocalypse. It's about Harold Hayes, the man who was the editor of Esquire magazine in the 60s. Have you ever seen this, Smiling Through the Apocalypse?
I don't think so.
It is worth it. I got a copy, a DVD on Amazon for like 10, 12, 15 bucks, something like that, and watched it. I got it a couple of weeks ago and watched it not long ago. And I'd seen it, but was always impressed with him as an editor and the magazine and its writers, its contributors back in that era. Let me give you some of the names. Norman Mailer, Tom Wolfe, James Baldwin, Saul Bellow, William F. Buckley, Gore Vidal, William Stryon, William Burroughs, Rex Reed, Gay Talese, Timothy Leary, Terry Southern, Gary Wills, Tom Wicker, Malcolm Muggeridge, Jack Richardson, Martin Mayer, Richard Rovers, Adam Clayton Powell, and, you know, about 30 others. And I'm quoting from the book jacket of the book Smiling Through the Apocalypse, which is basically Esquire's history of the 60s as seen by its contributors, or, you know, in that era. And I ordered a secondhand copy of that, and it arrived today, and it'll take forever to read it. It's got to be 600 pages, if it's a page, and it's smallish print, which will be an interesting challenge for these tired old eyes of mine. But if nothing else, get a copy of that movie, Smiling Through the Apocalypse. And it'll give you a sense of just how stupid we are today, a lot of us, not us, but most others. We have no concept about anything other than the prize fight that goes on, the horse shit that's pumped out by Fox, and the horse shit that's pumped out by Jethreen Bodine, and the demented circus peanut himself. And even the horse shit that gets pumped out from time to time on other stations like CNN and MSNBC. And I don't want to sound like an elitist.
Oh, that's okay. Go ahead.
There was a time in this country when there was a halfway intelligent discourse about the nature and meaning and events of life in the world and in these here United States. I remember foreign bureaus by ABC, NBC, and CBS on television. I watched another of the movies that I hadn't seen for a while that was on the Starz preview was Broadcast News, Holly Hunter and I can't think of the male lead, blonde-headed guy, was in the movie with Glenn Close where they're reuniting in South Carolina. Kevin Kline was in it. Their friend had died. And
Big Chill.
Big Chill, yeah. Whoever the blonde lead was in that, the male lead. But Broadcast News, and I actually had Dyed Ricola go through my nose. Peter Hackus in the film, who was actually a real live NBC journalist at one time, had retired. He was playing the head of a Washington bureau in the film of a TV network. And Robert Prosky, I believe his name was, who was the overweight.
Did you mean William Hurt?
William Hurt. That's who I was trying to think of. Well, anyway, the film is based in the D.C. bureau of an unnamed network. And Peter Hackus is the honcho, the head vice president in charge of the D.C. bureau of the news network. And Holly Hunter is a producer of the evening news show.
Oh, I love that film.
Which is anchored from New York by, of all people, their senior TV anchor, Jack Nicholson. Okay. And William Hurt is the new guy that gets hired to first be a reporter and then. But one of the thing that made the diet ride go through my nose, and this is an echo of that era where the news bureaus, the news divisions of all the broadcast networks did these massive cuts, budget cuts and layoffs in the 90s. And the figure quoted in the movie Broadcast News, I believe, was 24 million. The bureau, the D.C. bureau, had to slash the budget to the tune of 24 million, which meant getting rid of people in production, in tech work, and on-air talent, and also supervisors and things. Well, Robert Prosky, who played the shift sergeant, I guess, on Hill Street Blues, I believe it was, after Nick Colasanto died, the one who would say, be careful out there, he was a longtime character actor on the D.C. stage, Robert Prosky was. Well, anyway, he plays like the news director of the bureau. He's the next person down from Peter Hackus. Well, he's one of the people caught up in this budget slashing. And the exit interview goes, and Peter Hackus is walking Robert Prosky out of the office and has that sincere moment when he says, and if there's anything I can do for you, don't hesitate to let me know. Whereupon Prosky says, well, you could die soon. And that's when the diet right so went through my nose.
That's one of my favorite films.
Oh, God.
They put on a special screening of it for CNN people when I was at CNN.
Oh, wow.
So it's the late 80s.
Yeah.
At the Terra Cinema in Atlanta. And, you know,
Terra as in the,
yes,
the,
yes,
the estate.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. They've gone
not
with the wind.
Terror.
No, Terra, T-A-R-A. And the theater was full of young, you know, 21, 22, 23-year-olds who absolutely thrilled to the scene of the one young videographer, editor, you know, running. Remember the one running
oh, yes.
with the tape?
Yes. Yes. Seconds to go.
Because everybody in the room had done that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the genius of that movie, it wasn't so much about, you know, an ABC, CBS, NBC. It was about the rise of the 24-hour news cycle and cable news channels.
I thought it was a broadcast network, but you're right. You're probably right. Well, you are right. You're often right.
One of my favorite lines, the one person you neglected to mention was Albert Brooks.
Oh, say it again? I was
Albert Brooks.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because he's brilliant in it. And there's one line, and you know, he's like a line producer or whatever, and he sits mm-hmm. there, and he feeds the information through the IFB into the ear of William Hurt, who, of course, is nothing but an empty suit.
A former sportscaster.
He has no ethic. He has no ethics, no morals, no journalistic integrity, and no skills.
Yeah, so automatically.
And so there's a plane shot down, and there's this scene where he keys the mic and he says, you know, the F-82 is a, and gives a bunch of stats. And no, he's sitting at home, and he calls the bureau and gives them all this information.
Tells Holly Hunter, who is executive producing.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. And she feeds it into William Hurt's IFB. And then William Hurt says it. Albert Brooks is watching it. And he goes, it's magic. I say it here, it comes out there.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, because one of my filthy little hobbies is that when I get up and watch my filthy little habit in the morning, I tweet at the fuckers just because it's fun. Just because it's fun to catch them in stupid shit and correct them on Twitter.
Yeah.
Wrecked them. Damn near killed them. And so there was one day, I mean, I beat them, you know, by a few seconds and they said it. And then I immediately responded to my own tweet and said, yeah, I say it here. It comes out there. But it's,
can you imagine? I haven't seen Morning Joe for some time, but I believe their producer, when I watched it, was a guy named Alex, or maybe a woman.
Yeah, Alex is still there.
Well, you know that Mika and Joe both have their little IFBs, so you know that someone is, some disembodied voice is speaking things into their ears, and I don't know how much of it comes...
Well, yeah, there was one of those moments this morning because Mika, for all the millions that she's paid to do what she does every morning, well, she fucks up a lot. She means well, I think, in some cases, but she fucks
you
up
think?
A lot. Cheryl, that's probably a word you're going to have to deal with next. You might be time to put little Ann down, you know, for her nap. But anyway, so today she's talking about Trump going to Alabama. And he went to this place, and it's probably an old indigenous Native American word meaning river of death or something like that. But the thing is, Joe is constantly beating on him being a proud Alabamian. Proud son of the Capstone, graduate of the University of Alabama. And, you know, I talk about my Alabama upbringing. So, I mean, there's no harm in that. But Mika, you know, she's so... And, I mean, we were talking about this last week. It's a sign of hubris, Scott. If you can't even be troubled to learn the name of somewhere, I'll do it here. I'll say, okay, I got a 50-50 chance of getting this wrong, and anybody who bets on me getting this right is a fool. And then I'll go ahead and get it wrong. because there's no more pronouncers. So he went to this town. It's decent size for an Alabama town, in southeast Alabama. Opelika.
Opelika.
Sure.
And I believe that's where Ampax was, the videotape people.
Uh-huh. And it's in the same county with Auburn University. Well, Mika pronounces it because, you know, Mika is such a coastal elite Euro trash snob. She pronounces it Opelika.
It's Opelika, woman.
It's Opelika, damn it. I'm like, and it was like, God damn, you know, Joe's from there. Just ask him. He'll tell you.
Yeah.
Opelika. So, I don't know, maybe in the break he's like, honey, that's Opelika.
Yeah.
But it happens all the time. But the one that really got me this weekend, and I generally enjoy the programs that MSNBC has on the weekends because they're, you know, maybe not quite as, they're not quite as zoo crew-y as what Morning Joe is. But David Gura, who does Up with David Gura or whatever, the hashtag.
That's not like Up with People.
No, the hashtag is Uppers. But okay. They were having the obligatory, and this is a larger topic that we can really sink our teeth into if we want to. They were having their obligatory Ilhan Omar Bruga 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 segment. You know, where they get all breathless and they tell you, oh, Ilhan.
Yeah.
And so there's this guy whose last name is Cohen. I don't know. I don't know who he was. All I know is he apparently couldn't find his necktie when he took off to go to the studios that morning. Because
is that the guy who's the Russian expert that Barton has on?
I don't know. But he couldn't be bothered. He's got like a sport jacket and a dress shirt, but he couldn't find his tie. That was the first thing that leapt out at me. And he says, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm close enough that it'll work for the purposes of our discussion. He says, we need to deprive Ilhan Omar of oxygen.
Well, there's a Christian charitable moment of humanity. You can almost see the milk of human kindness dribbling down his chin, Bob.
And of course, I was, you know, I was up and tweeting and everything. It was like, what? And I've been waiting to see if it, and there were other people who heard it at the same time because they responded to what. And what was funny, though, is they went to break after that, Scott, and then they came back and tried to, the term that trial lawyers use is rehabilitate the witness. And so David Gura comes back, and they come back from break, and he's like, well, yes, of course, I understand what you mean when you say that we need to deprive Ilhan Omar's ideas of oxygen. Like, no soap. He said what he said. Eliminate.
Oh, it's the keep digging. When you find yourself in a hole, keep digging method.
Right. Only stop. But instead of letting it pass by, he reinforced what had already been said. But deprive Ilhan Omar of oxygen.
Hmm.
And the word idea was not in there anywhere. If you're able to go back and find it, and you find that they have the word ideas inserted in there, then it really is something sort of like what Trump said with the Tim Cook of Apple.
There's no wiggle room at all.
Lying ears heard what they heard.
It's not a metaphorical observation or suggestion. It's pretty straightforward.
Right, and the point, he was so wrought, and these people have gotten themselves so wrought over Ilhan Omar that they're just they're beyond the boundaries of propriety or sanity or anything. And so the goddess of irony being the goddess of irony and Freudian slips being all lacy at the bottom and everything, he said, deprive Ilhan Omar of oxygen. And I'm just thinking, you know, what, in a pressure, in a sealed vacuum unit? I mean, what exactly do you want to happen to her, bub?
To the moon, Alice. I'm sending you to the moon.
But it really got said, and I'm glad the conversation went the way it did, because I wanted to make sure that we got a Moran nomination in there for that. They are so fucking gone over the fact that she would dare to challenge money in American politics that he couldn't help himself, and his inner monologue got loose, and he just wants to fucking kill her.
Jesus.
Deprive Ilhan Omar of oxygen.
That's something out of The Final Solution, Bob.
Yeah, it kind of is.
You know, well, it doesn't seem like it would have been the guy that I was thinking of. It must have been some other Mr. Cohen.
No, that's Anatole in the chat room said that's Stephen Cohen. This wasn't that guy.
Okay, well, yeah, I couldn't imagine him saying something like that, but you know, he could have just as well said, deprive her of any future metabolic process.
Or he could have just said, strangle her.
Yeah,
I mean, that's essentially what depriving of oxygen is, isn't it?
Well, and yeah, it's most vivid form, yeah, that's precisely what it is.
And I didn't, and see, I tuned in too late. Well, you know, they'll font the guy once and tell you who he is, and never again. And I missed on finding out his name.
Okay.
Maybe somebody in the Horn ad hoc research department will find that out.
Well, the phrase to search is Cohen, and then what were his exact words?
David Gura guessed Cohen.
Deprive oxygen.
Deprive Ilhan Omar of oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah, that should bring it right
because
up.
Because I'm one of these word nerds, and I pay attention, and I'm tuned into a few frequencies. It's kind of like taking a feed on the internet. I'm tuned in for eliminationism. I'm tuned in for racist dog whistles and bigoted dog whistles. So when there's a part of my brain that goes ding ding, and just kind of check on the replay. Yep, deprive Ilhan Omar of oxygen.
Well, and this is what I was getting at when I was talking about the writers for Esquire 50 years ago and more and less, okay? And the social / political discourse having been, I don't know what's happened to it. It ain't what it used to be. But there is no definition on God's earth that could possibly, there's no definition broad enough to include deprive, insert name of anyone of his or her oxygen. There's no way that the definition, political discourse and social discourse could be broad enough to include that phrase that pays as a useful part of discourse. There's just no effing way, in deference to the napping, soon to be napping children out there. Okay? I mean, it is no wonder that we as a people are so effed up. The conversation has so degraded that there should be no surprise, not a molecule of surprise, that things are as bat crap crazy as they are, Bob. And why does MSNBC, that's the station you had it on, right?
Yeah.
Why does MSNBC have people like that on? Certainly, it could not come as any surprise to the host or the producer or the booker that this Mr. Cohen would have, I mean, if he is known for that type of comment and attitude and viewpoint, there's nothing that that person brings to the party that's of worth and value. You know, it's like, I know, you know, the it's in vogue to give somewhat equal access on some stations to opposing viewpoints in a conversation, but that's not even a valid opposing viewpoint. So if it's not, you've got to look at, if it's not that, well, then what is it? What is the purpose for having someone who would say something like that on? And I'm not, you know, putting my jackboot on the neck of freedom of speech or expression or contrary opinion. I'm speaking as an advocate of civil discourse, for Christ's sake. Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, I do.
Is there, can I be that? Am I?
You know, sometimes, Scott, I just write it off to, I'm a geezer now. And somehow I don't get it. And it's not very satisfying when I just kind of punt and do that.
Yeah.
But,
well, I'm not, I mean, I can't dismiss stuff like that as easily, I guess. Or,
well, I can tell, like the Ilhan Omar comment, I sent the tweet at 9:54 a.m. on Saturday the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
9:54 a.m., which at that point in time would be Eastern Standard Time. And what I tweeted was, want to talk about hate speech? Because that's what the whole round table was about. Ooh, Bruga Bruga, Ilhan Omar, Bruga Bruga Bruga, hate speech, Bruga Bruga, Ilhan Omar, Bruga Bruga. And then he says, depriver of oxygen. And I was right on it, so it must have happened probably at 9:50, no later than 9:52 a.m. Want to talk about hate speech? How about the dude on Uppers, hashtag, who couldn't find his tie this morning, urging that Ilhan be deprived of oxygen. Eliminationist language matters. And then an individual who follows me said, I'm watching too, and thought, what the?
And how then, old is this Cohen fellow? How old does he look to you?
You know, I'd say mid to late 40s, maybe 50 tops.
I mean, do we know his pedigree, what he's known for?
No, I just caught that. No, he's an opinion guy. But then when they came back from break, I wound up tweeting again. No, he didn't say deprive her ideas of oxygen. He said deprive, and I used all caps, her of oxygen.
I can't believe that we are the only people who notice these things.
Well, obviously one other person noted, and the tweet just kind of sank and went away. But and I'm sure it was a slip of the tongue. But you hear a slip of the tongue like that, Scott.
Was it, Bob?
Well, I mean, I have to, you know, it wasn't some goddamn Republican on Fox, so that means that the benefit of the doubt is given. And I think the fact, but I think the fact that they came back and tried to whitewash it and change it to deprive, because that was repeated, deprive her ideas of oxygen. It was repeated,
yeah,
with the insertion of ideas, because somebody on that panel knew that he had fucked up.
Did he address it any further, saying, well, that's not exactly what I meant?
No. They blew right past it as if he had never said deprive her of oxygen.
Well, see, now that stuff needs to be challenged whenever it happens.
Because I sent a tweet on that, too, and I said, No, not, and the person who responded to me, I said, yeah, and he just now tried to whitewash, and I do mean white.
That
eliminationist comment. She, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and I can do a whole hour on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez this evening from the weekend, because she took up residence in a whole lot more Republican brains and some Democrats this weekend, because she said that there were elements of the New Deal that were racist. Shh, don't tell them, Scott, but it's true.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, which ones is she talking about? Because there were.
Yeah. And she, some of the stuff you could make an argument over, because she name-checked FDR, and FDR did some racist things, the internment of the Japanese, for starters. But among other things, the magnificent Eleanor was there, and Eleanor was, as white folks went, a pioneer. And there, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get some pushback, and that's okay, but there is this aspect for some people who, and Boss Man Wayne first pointed it out on me, and out to me, and Boss Man Wayne has got 20 years of life on me. And he said there are some folks out there who think history didn't happen until history doesn't exist until they become aware of it.
Yeah.
And or misinformed. So, and so, for instance, it. I guess nobody has told Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez yet, or she hasn't read it or hasn't learned it yet, and that's okay. There was lots of stuff I didn't know when I was 29. Believe you me. Lots of stuff I still don't know. The calculus, for instance. But Harry Truman was so disgusted with the racism that he witnessed that he is the one who, by virtue of the power vested in him as commander-in-chief, integrated the military.
Well, let me say a word about
Harry. And just one more thing, and because right. This is important. He also was absolutely unequivocal in his support for what we now refer to as universal single-payer health care. He saw it being instituted in the European countries that were shattered after the war. We weren't shattered. We were filthy fucking rich. We were probably as rich as we have ever been.
And we were helping to rebuild those countries.
Right.
Over whom we had been victors.
And he wanted single payer. You know, for all those people, for some reason or another, we do these things, and I always push back a little bit. Eisenhower was a good Republican. Well, Eisenhower was not particularly in favor of integrating the military. He was perfectly happy to be completely in charge of the European invasion and that was a segregated military. And he was okay with it. But the other thing, and this is more important, is that there's a 90 year history of Republicans calling Democrats socialists and commies. Okay? It's real. Mm-hmm. It exists. You can't hide from it. They did it. But Eisenhower in particular railed against single-payer health care, universal coverage, railed against it as a step towards socialism and communism. And yet this is the same Eisenhower who later writes a letter to his cousin and says, the politician who suggests ending, or the political party that suggests ending Social Security, will cease to become a national party and will become nothing but a rump, or something. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, she made those comments, and most of them were valid. Her critique of capitalism at South by Southwest was entirely valid.
And it caused me to start writing about, because the pushback on it was, oh, AOC, Bruga, Bruga. Socialism, Bruga, Bruga. Commie, Bruga, Bruga. AOC, Bruga, Bruga. Bruga, Bruga is my throwaway phrase for meaningless, hypocritical, ill-informed objection.
You said something, and I know I was going to say a word or two about Harry S. Truman.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But you said something in your speech just now, your speaking just now, that reminded me of something I saw last week on Vice News Tonight on HBO. And I forget what night it was, but it was one night last week. They did a segment on a woman, a trans woman. I can't think of the name that she uses as her actual legal name. But on YouTube, if you put in the search bar Contra Points, I believe it is, Contrapoints, you'll get her videos. And I watched a few of them and posted a couple of them on my own Facebook timeline. And one of the things she talks about is dealing with the right. And one of the things she talks about is capitalism in two parts, which are well worth viewing. And I thought, gee, she would make an interesting guest. I don't have a real great track record with my guest suggestions, and you don't have visitors on all that often.
It is, and let me just as an aside,
but look her up.
It's so goddamn time consuming. It can eat up the better part of a day or more.
The benefit would be an hour visit well spent. This is a very witty woman. And look at a couple of her videos, and very clever, and has some chops in terms of video production.
Well, truth be told, most people will not come on a radio program, mine or anybody else's, unless they have something to sell. It is an entirely transactional process. I've done a lot of it over the years. I did a ton of it early on.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it would be valuable if I did more of it. But,
well, she might bring a number of people to the show, Bob. There's always that aspect of it, because she's got like a million followers on YouTube.
Natalie Wynn,
thank you. Well, check her out or watch those two things.
Well,
dealing
I will.
With
I will.
The right and her the two-part thing on capitalism. Because, I mean, she resonated with me in terms of I appreciate a well-thought-out bit of speaking, and she added the visual element, and she plays all the characters, and she sings. I mean, what the fuck? Who could ask for more? I mean, when it comes to cheap entertainment. But anyway, that's just an aside. One of the things I learned in my time in Kansas City during most of the 80s was that Independence, Missouri, was just across the way, just a little jaunt down to the east on I-70, where Harry Truman lived most of his adult life when he wasn't in D.C. as president or a senator.
Independence.
But he was Independence, Missouri. But he was born on a farm in a place called Lamar, Missouri, which is just south of Grandview, Missouri, which is just south of Kansas City, Missouri. And back when he was coming up, the Klan was not an inconsequential fact of life in Missouri in those days. It may still be, for all I know. I haven't been there for some time.
Just as an aside, there's a lot of data out there that suggests that the Klan is a hell of a lot more consequential than most people are willing to acknowledge on either side of the political aisle. This is one of the few places where we say, oh, no.
In today's world, you mean?
Yeah.
Of course the Klan is. And what ain't Klan is Nazis. And what ain't Nazis and Klan is white separatist religious wackaloons. I mean, there's a flavor. You talk about, your ice cream shop with 31 flavors. there's something for everyone. And there's a lot of nuts in some of those flavors, you know, in terms of crazy off-the-wall thinking. But yeah, I mean, and I'm sure, well, if you've read anything about Truman, I believe the writer Merle Miller did a not too bad documentary, and also the book based on it, Plain Speaking, where Harry is interviewed and talks about his life and part of his life as a youngster, you know, in that part of Missouri. Yeah, was he a protege or was he benefited by the corrupt Tom Pendergast? Of course. But did he transcend it in great measure? See, that it's not where you start, it's where you end up, has been my thought.
Right, and that's the much-noted phenomenon of the presidency to change the people who enter the office. Because there's no one who knows how to be president when they get in. We've had maybe one person in the entire history of the country who was raised to be a president. He lasted one term, and then he was gone.
Now, who was that, though? Because I'm thinking...
John Quincy Adams.
Oh, okay. So this was way before any of us came along.
John Adams was an irascible prick. But he sent
that
his...
Was if Twitter had been around, that would have been his handle.
Yeah, at irascible prick. Yes.
Mommy, what's irascible prick mean? Go to bed!
But at 14, he was sent off to be the secretary to the U.S. ambassador to the court of the Tsar. I mean, everything was done to groom him to be president.
Yeah.
And even though he was educated and groomed, when he got there, it hit him right between the eyes, just like everybody else who's ever stepped into the building.
Yeah,
but some
it comes at you. I mean, in ways that you don't. There's no way to be prepared for it.
And some people rise to it better than others. And you could say that to a certain extent, Truman rose to it. Truman was burdened by the fact that he was the replacement for Henry Wallace.
Yeah.
And Henry Wallace was ditched because Henry Wallace was so vocally anti-fascist, or at least ditched in part. Part of it had to do with the election map for 1944.
Yeah.
The other part of it, though, had to do, was it 44?
Yeah.
Anyway, but the other part of it had to do that Henry Wallace was so anti-fascist that that people realized, and I'm not endorsing the notion, but they thought, you know, when we win, because we're gonna have to deal with the Nazis. And if you recall, George Patton wanted to reconstitute the Wehrmacht and march on Russia.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that, but you're right.
That would have sent Henry Wallace right up a tree. And it didn't, you know, it didn't happen, it didn't play. But the denazification of Germany might well have been a far bloodier affair if Roosevelt dies in office and is President Wallace. So yeah. He had to be gotten out of the way.
And also the Democratic machine politicians didn't want him. I don't know if those reasons played into it, but they wanted someone not quite as controversial, or not controversial at all. Christ, I mean, Harry Truman for the 80 some days that he was vice president, or not vice president, yeah, vice president, He was totally out of the loop. I think he was with FDR twice or three times, had no idea about the bomb. And he put, Harry put it right when they, when he gave his response as to how he felt upon Roosevelt's death and becoming president.
I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy, something like that.
Well, no, he said it's like being behind a wagon carrying hay and a big old bale or two of it falls on you, you know, along with the sun and the stars and the moon and the planets.
And even the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, he was briefed, but the process that they had already put in place was such that Truman didn't say yes. He was in a position where he had to affirmatively say, don't. It was gonna happen.
Yeah.
It had been predetermined.
Well, that was the point of the exercise. He was not in any position, even as commander-in-chief. Like you said, all he could do was give assent or not dissent. Two more things and then I'll go. Quick things. If we were to somehow magically have had this conversation on a network channel like let's say, for instance, MSNBC or even CNN, we'd never have it on Fox, but we might have it on MSNBC or CNN because they like to pepper the panels with opposing viewpoints. There would be somebody hearing me speak or hearing you speak, hearing me speak, say, oh, you're just, at some point they would say, oh, Scott, you're just stuck in the 60s. You're a hippie. And that pisses me off when people do
goddamn
that.
Dirty hippie.
That shorthand, especially the moniker stuck in the 60s. I am not stuck in the 60s. They were here and they have gone, never to be recaptured. But there are things from that era that are worth hanging on to in terms of speaking up and speaking out and calling people on their shit and being, as I believe the Black Panther movement, one of their sayings was, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Well, part of being part of the solution, an aspect of that, is to be oriented toward solutions. And somehow we have lost track of that in large measure in today's world. And I'm not stuck in the 60s. I am merely proposing that we recapture some of our youthful optimism and outrage even about the current state of things. And quickly getting back to the book that arrived today that I ordered, Smiling Through the Apocalypse, I was flipping through it when I took it out of the package and a business card fell out of it. And it was a business card for a reporter at the Courier News, a Gannett newspaper in New Jersey, a place called Somerville, New Jersey. I'm not even sure where that is. And the name written at the bottom of the reporter is Ann Devroy, D-E-V-R-O-Y. And the name didn't ring a bell, so I looked it up. And I found out that she was born in 1948 and died in 1997 at age 49, I believe it was, of uterine cancer. And she was an American political journalist and a White House correspondent for 15 years and was highly thought of for her reportage in terms of the several presidents that she covered. And that's a distinction that I think it might be a good idea to recapture And this goes for anyone listening to me now. And it certainly goes to your friend Mika to learn something, to find out something that you've never known about before, even if it's a little nugget of information about someone who's been dead and gone for some years, who was good at what they did. And I don't know if this was her book or if this was a book of someone she encountered to whom she gave her business card back then. I don't know any of it. There's an address on the back written, Box So-and-So, Princeton, New Jersey, RD3, and a zip code. I don't know who that person is. But I've learned about a person, because she didn't appear on the panel shows. I believe she was on Meet the Press once. Anne Devroy, D-E-V-R-O-Y, and apparently, according to Wikipedia, as part of her legacy, the Washington Post, who she later worked for, created an annual journalism fellowship at the University of Wisconsin in Eau Claire, and gives a list of the speakers who were featured at the subsequent programs. And there's quite a list of luminaries, and one might do well to check them out. It's apropos of nothing, except maybe it's good to learn some of our history, and some of the more obscure history in today's world, you know, because it's that old thing. If we don't learn from our history, there are aspects of it which are going to snap up and bite us in the ass. And we're in critical times today. All you got to do is turn on your TV or listen to Bob or read something. And a fourth grader could look and point and nod and say, Mommy, Daddy, whomever. We're in critical times. So I'm not going to get on the bandwagon decrying the pronouncements of our younger generation in the House or the Senate or anywhere else. I'm going to say, good for you. Speak up, speak out, raise some hell, stir things up, and keep the damn conversation going, because it's going to be our only salvation. And I don't mean to preach, but...
No, that's okay. And you know, I thought you might find it interesting. Our buddy Earther looked up the Eisenhower quote.
Mm-hmm.
Should any political party attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, and eliminate labor laws and farm programs, you would not hear of that party again in our political history. There is a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do these things. Among them are H.L. Hunt. You possibly know his background. A few other Texas oil millionaires and an occasional politician or businessman from other areas. Their number is negligible, and they are stupid. Well, we just got done having a Speaker of the House who would like nothing better than to get rid of Social Security, eliminate labor laws, and farm programs. And they are no longer of negligible number, but they are still stupid.
Well, and case in point, and this will be my closing point, Doctor, I sent you a thing earlier, a link from the Washington Post, headline, Trump proposes big cuts to health programs for poor, elderly, and disabled. And I'm 3 for 3 in that demographic. I'm not quite poor, but I can see it from here. I'm not quite elderly, but I'm older than I've ever been. And I am, by the rules and laws of and guidelines of Social Security, disabled, at least until my birthday when I turn 65. Will I be retired?
At which point you will disabled? No, or? At which point you will be miraculously cured.
Well, I'm going to a seminar by an insurance carrier, because I'm already receiving Medicare but apparently you've got to do something in order to engage it in your, quote, retirement bracket or years. It's all very confusing to me. So I'm going to go and find out next Monday what the hell's involved with it. And the guy that I talked to on the phone today said that it's a good idea to call Social Security and see if they have a pamphlet or a brochure that explains it. Because I knew that there would be something I would have to do, but I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know what, if anything, would change. And, you know, you're nowhere near retirement. I mean...
Oh, no, I'm fucked. I don't get to retire till 67 anyway. Well, my generation was drinking beer bongs and smoking real bongs, the Republicans quietly went about the business of fucking us.
Well, see, that's why we need to never stop paying attention and raising hell when they propose this shit. Because
yeah, but the people who were supposed to be paying attention sold us out.
I know.
That's your generation, Scott.
I know, Bob. I'll tell you, I'll fess up to it. I was a child of the 60s and demonstrated and marched and raised hell. And then in the 70s, we had a big old disco party. I wish I had my platform shoes and plaid breeches and puffy shirt to show you. There are no pictures, thank God, of that era. I had a perm back when it was a big thing for men to get permed hair. Okay, I was a child of the 60s, and boogie.
Oh, dear God, are you telling me you had a wife row?
I had a wife row. Yes, I did. Yes, I did, Bob. And I boogied on down with the best of them at discos in the 70s. And then in the 80s, I fell asleep. I fell asleep, Bob. And I woke up, and all of a sudden it was the 90s. And now here we are. We've been through the first part of the 2000s, that fucking bridge to the 21st century. And now we're in the 2010s, almost leaving them. I see signs marking exit and even a Stuckey's or two on the great roadway of life headed for the 2020s, for crying out loud. So
and wouldn't it be nice if in the 2020s we got a perfectly clear moral vision, but
I
ain't betting that way.
I know I'm the relentless optimist, and here's why. We saw what happened in 2016, okay? But we saw what happened in 2018. And what would it be like, Bob, if that were a harbinger for even better things to come in 2020.
That's why I keep preaching Dare to Dream, and that's also why there was some Ilhan Omar Bruga over the weekend, because she said just because people did bad things in a polished way in the past doesn't mean we overlook those too. She does not say Barack Obama by name. Mm-hmm. But all the multimillionaire for-profit media outlets went, Ilhan Omar, Bruga Bruga, criticizes Barack Obama, Bruga Bruga. And, you know, silly me, you know who I thought she was talking about?
Well, what did she say? Because I must have missed that.
Oh, I mean, I just paraphrased, but...
Yeah.
She said, you know, Trump is not the be-all and end-all of bad things. Bad things were done by people with more polish in the past.
She didn't mean to paint Brock with that same brush she just painted Trump with, did she?
That's what I was going to say. When I read the quote, I thought, huh, that looks like she's talking about, say, Elliot Abrams. Because Elliot Abrams is a blast from our past, and he sits there and his tie's perfectly knotted. And he talks in stentorian tones, and, well, little lady, you just don't understand. Sometimes a few nuns just need a good raping. That's what I thought she was but the for-profit media is deeply invested in the horse race and wrestling model of American politics. So they're doing everything they can to create this sense of disunity.
Because on the Democratic side.
On the Democratic side. because it'll make everything ever so much more exciting if the 2020 race is a real goddamn nail-biter for the existential future of this country.
Well,
which it already is.
I was born at night, Bob, but it wasn't last night, and it wasn't even the night before last. And I will tell anyone listening, and you can tell everybody, you know, don't buy into this horse race horse shit in 2020. Don't even give it a moment.
Yeah, and the other thing you reject out of hand is, come on, is that school of journalism that says, come on, let's you and him fight.
Yeah, yeah. And here's, you know, don't pay attention to the horse race. Don't get caught up in that dynamic. And if you're going to do something, behave in a manner consistent with building a future that works appropriately and positively for all concerned.
And I don't know how to make it happen, but Mitch McConnell has got to go.
And take Cornhole, John Cornhole, with him.
Yep.
Amen. Amen, Bob.
So,
is that a good note to close?
Yeah, on? I think it is. I think it is, Scott.
All right. Well, take care, and thank you for your indulgence today, and thank the Horn family for their kind attention. And I hate long goodbyes, so I won't drag this out. It never stops impressing me what a resource these 3 hours, 5 days a week are. And to the people listening who maybe haven't pitched in a few bucks recently or maybe never have, it is worth it. What you get back is far more than what you put in. And it's a resource that has returns that maybe we're not even aware of. Well, I'm so happy I found this program by way of Malloy mentioning it. I don't know the past several years how I might have danced through life without this ongoing conversation, Bob, and I mean that.
Well, I thank you sincerely. You know, I had somebody asked me on Twitter today when I was fulminating about, you know, the Morning Zoo crew, said, I don't know how you can stand to watch it. It drives me crazy. And my response was, it inspires me to watch that stuff. Those are multimillionaires. Those are multimillionaires who can't actually work for 3 whole hours in the morning without rerunning their first half hour in their third half hour.
Yeah. What do they do?
And they screw up as much or more than I do.
Yeah.
And they're surrounded by people who can carry some of the weight for them. Now, in our conversations, you carry some of the weight. When we do the conversation radio thing, other people are carrying some of the weight.
Yeah.
But for what we do, with how little we have to do with, it's kind of like the handicap in golf. You know, I'm an 18 handicapper who is whipping the ass of, and I don't get egotistical like this very often, but I'm an 18 handicapper who's whipping the ass of a scratch golfer every goddamn day.
I don't know anything about golf. Is that good?
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, okay.
It kind of,
miniature golf. I mean,
you get the idea. You know, we go around with ancient busted equipment, scrambling just to keep the damn lights on.
What is the name of that mixer again? I want to look that up. I may be in.
Little Junior. It is called. It is the one I'd like to have to take on the road, is an Allen and Heath XB10.
Okay.
It's specifically made for broadcast applications, and it comes in at about $800. And
well, that's not an insurmountable number with our crew. Come on.
I mean, when I'm sitting here and we got $273 to raise so that we're not at $473 tomorrow, yeah, it is.
Well, okay, let's say you go for the hunk of equipment and tonight's deficit. You're talking a grand. How much money is there in the world, Bob? You've heard the saying, I wouldn't do thus and so for all the money in the world. I've never heard anybody quantify how much all the money in the effing world is. So whatever that number is, we're only talking about a grand. Ten $100 bills. Or
yeah.
X number of 50s. Or X number of 20s. Or X number of 10s. Or X number of 5s.
Yeah, truth be told, it's that gizmo and a laptop sufficient to run it.
Yeah.
And so that pushes it up, you know, probably $1,500 to $1,500. But
still, it's eminently doable. Behave in a manner consistent with creating a future that works positively and appropriately for all concerned. Be about that, friends, and you'll never go wrong. And if that includes a $1,500 outlay for a gizmo and a laptop to run it, it'll reap great rewards. Not in the sweet by and by, but in the somewhat crazy here and now.
God knows we could
use a chunk of that.
By God, are you like the second coming of Norman Vincent Peale or something?
No, Bob, I'm just somebody who looks at a situation and says, damn it,
your eyes
are better than mine. You can see this. You can hear this. I'm a child of the 60s and fiercely proud of it. I mean.
Yeah, I was not picking on you with the Norman Vincent Peale thing.
And God knows. Trump, as a child, went to the Marble Collegiate Church pastored by Norman Vincent Positive Thinking Peale.
By the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, I think the last time I heard it was on the order of $56 trillion. That's a shitload of money.
And in comparison, $1,500 ain't nothing. I mean, it's something when you ain't got it, but you get my drift. I didn't mean to go on like this.
No, that's okay. I sincerely appreciate it. I think it means more when people like you say what the program means to them. It means more than when I sit there and say, well, you know, we're just trying to keep the lights on, which is the absolute damn truth.
Well, yeah. With no help, thank you, from Appalachia. What is it called? Appalachia Power.
Appalachian Power. And by the way, I had a note from, we haven't heard from Ron and Raleigh in a while. And I finally found out why. I thought maybe Ron's shift had changed or something.
Uh-huh.
But Ron straightened me up. He said, I've been offline for 13 days. If you think Frontier's a bunch of ham-fisted pillocks, I was at the tender mercy of Charter Time Warner Spectrum. The tech that just got me back online told me that Spectrum is dumping the Time Warner legacy customers and throttling the speeds down to next to nothing. Currently, I'm blazing along at 3 Mbps, a pox on all their houses.
Oh, man, that's... Nobody in this country, even in many other countries, should be required to experience that degree of connection.
Well, among other things, I mean, this is just the dirty little reality. I crank out $200 a month for a line from Frontier that gives me 10 down and 1.5 up.
Mm.
So we have a bank of those just to get the program out every evening.
Jesus.
One connection does nothing but the stream. And another connection, and like when I sub for Malloy, that connection handles that too.
Yeah.
And then your Skype is coming in on a different connection, and I'm running on a different connection over on the main production machine.
Well, it's baling wire and gum, Bob.
Yeah. But it's $200 a pop per month.
For each of the connections?
Mm-hmm.
Holy God.
And I don't want the email saying, oh, you can get a better deal. Oh, how about the cable company? We had the cable company here, and they couldn't keep their connection up for 24 continuous hours.
Well, as I get older, I find that that is a common problem. Oh, you're talking about... Never mind.
Yeah. Say goodnight, Scott.
Good night, Scott. And good night, Bob, and good night, Horn family, wherever you are.
Later. Bye. See ya. So, 10 before the hour. And I really appreciate the kind words that you guys say about this effort here. I really, really do. Because, again, as I've said before, it's not like working live theater where you can kind of peer past the footlights out into the audience. The feedback that I get from you is the only way I know that this is working. So I do appreciate it. I appreciate it all. Let's finish the evening. And again, we got $273 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. That's $27.30 times 10 people, or 10 people, or 27.3 people. Well, you know, we'll round down the 0.3 people. That's 27 people at $10. Ain't going to happen, but that's where we are. Hey, Todd.
Yo, you know what? You don't know that.
No,
I'm just saying.
I know. I gotta stop. I gotta stop being such a nattering nabob of negativity.
And you know what? It's very easy to do, right? Scott presented a very powerful argument. And, you know, Scott sounded good. You know, he sounded like I used to sound when I was doing things. But what the fuck? I had to say that.
That's okay. Serious.
It's just, I mean, you know, Scott's all nice and cheery and all that shit. You know, that's fine. But at the end of the day, you know what? We're dealing with nefariousness. And there's reason to be pessimistic and negative. There really is. And sometimes it energizes people. You know, like, we're dealing with a lot of shit. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Now, what would you term the largest tackle that we have to make right now?
I'd say it's hard to put a star on any one thing, Todd, and say this is the thing and everything else will fall from it. But keeping the House and Senate and daring to dream of a supermajority in the Senate and beating Trump, I mean, if you put that all under the broad general heading of November 2020, then that's it. I don't think impeachment is. I don't think as much as I would like to see it happen. You know, sentencing Paul Manafort to an additional 10 years to serve consecutively, that ain't it. Convicting Roger Stone ain't it. Putting Junior in prison ain't it. For me, it's an eyes on the prize moment. And I know what Darlene meant earlier when she said, if you can't impeach Trump, who the fuck can you impeach? Well, you can impeach a Democratic president who had consensual oral sex. That's who you can impeach. Because those are the goddamn rules now. But I'm not trying to concern troll here, but I'm legitimately concerned.
Wait a minute, concern troll.
Yeah, I'm not being a concern troll. You know, I'm concerned.
Give a bell on that? I've never heard that.
Oh no, that's an old one. I can't give me a bell on that. You know, that's the asshole in the comment thread who won't just come out and disagree, but say, I have concerns, and will sit there and passive aggressively hijack the thread. That's a concern troll. So I'm not trying to be a concern troll, but I am concerned that. And look, who was it? Rashida Tlaib, So she's going to introduce she's going to introduce an article of impeachment within the month. Groovy, do it. But do not expect that it is going to. We shamed Nixon into resigning because he did not want to be impeached and he did not want to be convicted in the Senate, both of which were not just likelihoods but near certainties. That is not the situation here. And how sick is it that I'm saying this, Todd? Donald Trump does not have the moral clarity that Richard fucking Nixon had. Okay.
Oh, nowhere near. No.
No, but that's swirly straw in the tequila bottle material. We have a president with lower morals, less morals than Richard Nixon.
Right. So, but right. I still think. All right. So we have options here. There's death by a thousand investigations. You know. I still feel like if a president who left office with his administration, all right, having a deficit surplus. Oh, that's stupid.
Let me just run one past you, okay?
No, because you know what I'm trying to say.
I get very upset.
Over a fucking blowjob. He has to have, in other words, this guy has to have some taint on him. Okay, please, carry on.
Here's a scenario for you. We manage to not behave like Democrats, and we actually consolidate, or in the weeks leading up to the 2020 election in November, it looks like it's rock solid, lead pipe cinch certain that Trump is gone, the Senate is gone for the Republicans, and we consolidate our power in the House. Okay? What if...
I don't believe that.
Look, dare to dream, man. Dare to dream.
You believe that? I mean, seriously.
No, this is a hypothetical. We have to work with these, Todd.
But see, what I'm hearing from you is 60-40.
But wait, you haven't heard the ultimate part of the hypothetical.
Okay, you're right.
What if 2 weeks before the election of 2020, Trump resigns? Mike Pence becomes president of the United States just long enough to pardon Trump.
What
if Trump, you know, we've all been confronted with this idea, because Michael Cohen brought it up in his testimony, that he will not leave peaceably. What if he loses?
It won't matter.
In 2020, what if he loses? He quits. He quits on December 1. Pence becomes president until January 20th, 2021, and Pence pardons Trump.
That's okay, because New York State, you know what, he has to run. He has to win. Trump has to be president because his shit is fucked up, okay?
Unless he gets a pardon.
No.
Can't pardon himself, but Pence can damn sure pardon him.
He can pardon him, but it does not count for New York State. It does not count for District of Columbia. It does not count for Virginia, okay? So he's still facing charges. Now, and that's the truth. That's why he has to stay in office. He knows he has to stay. I mean, his advisors are telling him he has to stay in office. Do you not see that?
Well, yeah, I do. But if he doesn't win, this scenario works.
It doesn't
save him. It does not save him from New York State taking action, but it saves him from federal tax evasion. It saves him from however many conspiracies there are to defraud or commit a felony against the United States. It saves him from everything that could put him away forever, that because he's worried about the federal charges. I guarantee you he thinks he can leverage enough power in New York to save his ass.
And since you brought it up like that, since you brought it up in that way, so all his co-conspirators, you see, on those federal charges, they're going to prison. They're going to trial.
Do you not remember what George H.W. Bush did with all the Iran-Contra scumbags? I'm not being confrontational, Todd.
No, I know you're not. I know. You know, but how we talk. Come on.
But, you know,
they're still around.
They were stone cold busted, and George H.W. Bush pardoned them before they could get around to dropping the dime on what he knew, which was everything, about Iran-Contra.
You know what? Don't get me started on that shit. Because we're still hearing shit. People still feel like, I remember, oh, God, Ollie North, look, Lawrence Eagleburger, and you know, that's fast.
Camp Weinberger.
They all got, and look at the havoc, H-A-V-O-C, havoc that they allowed, you see. But now, you know, who are these characters that we're dealing with? See, this is the whole thing. Our shit is so fucked up. This asshole has just worked the system. He's a fucking shyster. He's worked this goddamn system to the max.
But I think just to have a clear statement of, you know, what's the one thing we've got to do. The one thing we've got to do is not come apart at the seams, not go ripping at each other, not allow the fucking Purity Patrol to ride roughshod all over the Democratic Party.
Oh,
and
I say one?
Go, man.
Last time we talked, it was about this kerfuffle with let's say a Minnesota type of representative who was saying some things, okay, and now that they're digging things out where there's maybe a pattern of what is, and see, this is complicated, and I remember, I'm totally against being a hypocrite, so when someone says they're offended, you have to respect that. But at the same time, you have to look at the facts. So if you call me a N-word and I'm offended, and you say, well, I should be able to say that because I see the guys on the street with the do-rags on, you know, saying that, so why can't I say it? Well, you can't say it. Well, why not? You see?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to differentiate ourselves from what is true and what is, you know, maybe stating facts. And I'm going to tell you something, and this is one word I have, and we have not talked since this. And I've not heard this in the media at all, and they're scared to touch this shit. We have to understand what Zionism is. Because, see, that's what this shit is about.
Yeah, Zionism is not synonymous with Jewishness.
It is not.
Some Jews are Zionists. Some non-Jews are Zionists, but not all Zionists are Jews.
But they wield power.
And not all Jews, right?
And that's the problem. Well, that is an issue. I'll put it like that. That's an issue. I'm trying to be clinical about this. That's an issue. Because if you understand what Zionism is, it's about supremacy.
Yeah.
Okay. And even the higher ends of the higher ends of Hasidim, you can argue, deal with supremacy, but it's not to that degree. So we have to deal with this.
And once again, the meanings of terms change, Todd, because the Zionism of Herzog is not necessarily the Zionism of 2019.
Well, wait a minute. How can that be?
Because there are different dynamics at work that are preached through it.
Well, why don't I hear the Z word? I don't hear the Z word anywhere. And this has nothing to do. We're just trying to have I
prefer to speak specifically about the policies and actions of the Israeli government.
That's what I'm talking about. Exactly.
And the Israeli government is de facto a Zionist government. But if the Zionism that arises with the Balfour Declaration and the mandate is Zionism 1.0, we're at about Zionism 4.0 now.
I would agree.
And it's not contracting, it's expanding. And before anybody starts Bruga, Bob Anti-Semitic, no.
Right.
No, abso-goddamn-lutely not. As a citizen, of an ostensibly free country, I reserve the right to criticize my own country and any other country on the planet when what they do runs contrary to what my moral and ethical values are.
Okay.
Is that
right.
Fair?
That's fair, and I think every time, it has to be some balance, because every time we hear these hyperbolic, what I consider hyperbolic, but some people consider normal, because I hear a lot of these pundits, man, these 3- and 4-digit thousands of dollar a year people saying, they're automatically assuming that these are anti-Semitic comments. However, I think it warrants a more aggressive inspection.
Or nuanced, even. For instance, I don't know if you know this. I was reading over the weekend. American political consultants who make a fortune, who have made a fortune, turning our political processes into a tawdry, filthy cesspit, took their show on the road, and as we saw with, say, Paul Manafort in Ukraine, they've done the same elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's happened in Israel too. And so right now there's a campaign going on in which, how bizarre is it when the woman who played Wonder Woman has to step up in defense of a TV presenter in Israel who dared to speak the heresy that Arabs living in Israel are human beings too. I mean, that's essentially what she said. It's political. It was in the context of politics, but there are filthy right wing parties in Israel who are running the Israeli equivalent of Willie Horton ads right now, saying, "Oh, that goddamn candidate over there. Well, if you elect him, he's going to form a coalition government, and he'll let those goddamned Arab parties be part of the coalition." And the guy that's being accused turns around and says, "I didn't say that." "Oh no, but that's what he's going to do. He'll let those Arabs, Israelis, think they're really Israelis. Oh God damn, that's intolerable."
Oh boy, see, that makes mud. That's muddy. It's muddy. See, we have to deal with. Let's deal with some content.
And that's pure American politics.
Pure
that has been exported.
Bullshit.
That has been exported. Filthy right-wing American politics that has been exported to take root in another foreign land.
Now, if we get to the point where, let's back up, and I'm not going to curse. I really want to curse. I want to be like I'm on the corner with.
Oh, go wild, man! We're in after hours now, but we got to wrap up kind of quick.
All right. Well, let's back up a little bit. Remember, Netanyahu disrespected the office of the presidency by coming over here and speaking to Congress without an invitation. They already didn't get along, but that was just a snub. Okay? That was a snub. And remember, that was because Netanyahu is a racist and he's part of the Likud party and he's part of the Zionist people. We have no business talking shit about the Palestinians. Okay, let's put that in one box because, and I'm gonna frame that. Let's just put that over here in one box. The second box. Why is it that that particular government continually is sanctioned by the United Nations and no one says a thing? It's like, oh yeah, they messed. Yep, that was a foul. Foul. You know, yep, we're playing tennis. Foul, you know. Nope, take this. Nope,
and they still foul. and they still get the point? Yeah.
They still get the point. And nobody says a damn thing. And so we have to, like, keep these things in your mind. Like, when you score, you know, almost like when you're looking at C-SPAN, you go, like, okay, this is the Cato Institute, this is Heritage Foundation. You know, you have to have your scorecard. You got to know who's saying what and what they're saying. See, this is a bunch of bullshit. And this is not, and don't get caught up into this bullshit. This has nothing to do with being anti-Semitic. Why in the world? Do these people understand what Stockholm Syndrome is? What the fuck is going on?
Well, from the Republican standpoint, it's simply a matter of using whatever tool is at hand to try to beat on the Democrats. And there are some in the Democratic Party who, for reasons I can't fully fathom, would rather help the Republicans do that than who would rather climb a tree and fight than stand on the ground and live in peace.
Well, right. And
Robert Frost once had a line in a poem where he said, "I'm so liberal I won't take my own side in a fight." And so I have to caveat everything that I say by noting that nobody, well, okay, they kind of did, but it's so far back in the dim mists of history that...
See, you had to pull yourself out from the absolute. I like to do absolutes, too. See, you had to pull yourself out.
Well, I mean, my ancestors had the fuck genocided out of them. But it happened so long ago that it doesn't matter. Okay? The religion was erased. The cultural traditions were largely erased. The language was almost erased. And
did you kick Joe in the teeth the other day? I'm serious.
Why?
Oh, come on, man. Joe was out of order, man.
Let me just finish the idea, Todd. I can't say I don't have. I'm not two generations removed from a monstrous regime trying to murder everybody like me. Okay? And I'm not even 400 years removed from a bunch of people slaughtering 100 million of mine. And so I have to be... I do reject the absolutes. Because I have to be cognizant that I don't know what it feels like to have a 2,000-year history, well, more actually when you count the Babylonians and the Syrians and, you know, everybody else who kicked Israel's ass in the Old Testament. I mean, they had a few early victories, and after that, they just turned into the Washington Generals, and everybody was the fucking Globetrotters. I don't have that history so... I don't wonder when the knock is going to come at the door in the dead and still of the night. I don't know. I don't wonder when the fires are going to start mysteriously happening in homes and places of worship. And so I can look at the issue one way, but I also, as a human being, have to take into account that I don't have the sufficient experience to be terrified for my life every day of my life. But here's the thing. In that benighted, miserable land, everybody has that. The Jews have that. The Arabs have that. The fucking Christians have that. When the Crusaders landed, when the Crusaders finally took Jerusalem, they went in and they slaughtered everything that breathed. Men, women, children, Jews, Muslims, some of their own.
The Crusade.
And I don't have that. And so I think Bibi Netanyahu, if he was the president of goddamn Bolivia, would have been rotting in a prison a long time ago. But there's some privilege that attaches. It's a horrifying privilege, but there is some privilege that attaches. And so he doesn't get touched. Except by his own country, which is looking deeply into the fact that the guy's apparently a goddamn crook.
Oh, that's it's such a mirror, isn't it? Isn't it so interesting?
But we got to get out of here, Todd. We'll pick this up.
Man, all right.
Sorry, well, I mean, just you know, happens.
It's time. I know. And Scott. God, did a great job, and thanks, Bob. And of course, you're doing an excellent job every day, all day. And so,
I appreciate it, man. I really, really do. You take it easy, all right?
Peace out.
Later. That's our buddy Todd. See, these conversations could go on for hours. They really could. But we'll have to see where the conversation takes us tomorrow for the Trump-tanic Tuesday. Thanks, everybody. I want to thank Jack in Shreveport for jumping in, and thank Joy earlier in the day. We've got tomorrow's fundraising goal will be at $473, and hopefully we'll knock some of that out. Maybe some new folks would jump in. And remember, the Lonely 13th is coming up, and we need subscribers on the 13th. We now have Greg, who's going to jump in alongside Gary and Gaia, but if anybody wanted to be a new subscriber on the 13th, that would be awesome. So thank you, everybody, for keeping the program on the air. Thank you, everybody, for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this little experiment in conversational broadcasting. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you earlier in the evening to Steve and Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years on the sharp end of the point of the point of the spear in the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.